In fact, I was going to try to do this interview.
Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is the Independent Corner with Jonathan Moody, and with me is Paul Kim.
Hey, how's it going? I'm good, brother man. How you doing?
Oh, pretty good, pretty good. Sorry, I can give you a heads up that this thing would just randomly start at, you know, the time I was supposed to, but, so how you been?
I'm good. Life's been good, been pretty busy, had a good 4th of July. How about you?
I've been great, been great. But we're here to talk about you. This is your interview.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, dude. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you agreeing to come on. You know, it was great.
You found me through MySpace. It's funny. You found me through Wang's character from Dorm Days and wrote me a message. And I was just, like, totally flattered. And I was like, wow, that sounds like it would be a great experience. So, here I am.
And I was more than happy because of... I was more than happy to have you on the show because, I've known you through the Dorm Days movies, Dorm
right.
Days 1 and 2. The one question I really had to ask.
Sure.
I don't see you on Dorm Days 3, like, from IMDb.
Oh, yeah. So I saw that, too. And a lot of times, like, before
IMDb
a movie comes out. Well, no, I think it's just one of those things where, like, a lot of people, before the production even comes out, and I think it should be coming out shortly. There's some talk about a possible theatrical release, which was great because like the first two films went straight to DVD.
But you are in the third one.
Yeah. We finished principal photography in mid-December and started 1st of November, and we shot in Romania, which is a wonderful experience.
Right.
But yeah, I haven't gone on IMDb and said, hey, I'm in Dorm 3 and did all that self-promotion stuff because I'm just really bad at that stuff.
But yeah, you know, it kind of scared me. I was like, oh man, Wang was one of my favorite characters.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that, man.
Yeah, no, I'm you and Pete, like you and Patrick.
Yeah, Patrick Kavanaugh is great. It's funny because I was just thinking about this the other day. And I was thinking, Patrick and I just have so much fun doing these films. And if you notice in the first film, we don't really have a lot to do in the first film, and we're just kind of like, there, you know, helping the story along. But part two was a lot of fun to work on. We got to go to Romania for part three. I don't even know what's going to be called Dorm Days. They're trying to figure that out.
They're going to change the name?
There's a possibility because it's so different from the first two films. It's kind of like, it's definitely a comedy, but like comedy slash horror film.
The same characters are going to be in their same name. I don't know.
Yeah, absolutely.
It could still be called Dorm Days 3, but have a really cool, ending to like Dorm Days 3,
right?
Die Harder.
Yeah, exactly. Or like 40% more Wang or something.
Yeah.
But I was really lucky because I think I talked to Worm and Patrick about this, and they really from what we talked about, they really enjoyed writing those characters, and it's just a joy to have fun and play these characters. Patrick and I. In the second film, it was funny because, we got to work with a monkey, which, sounds fun at first, but it really wasn't. and when they wrote this, they wanted to expand on those two characters specifically, and it came out quite nicely, I think. It was a lot of fun to work on.
No. Yeah, that sounds actually like a really good story. Anything funny with the monkey?
Well, you think, oh, yeah, sweet, I get to work with a capuchin monkey, and... that's awesome and all, but when you think about it, they're pretty high maintenance. They actually had their own memos. We had two monkeys, Levi and Spencer, and though they're adorable and, just cute as buttons, whatever, but they had a memo saying, don't stare directly into the monkey's eyes, or if you smile, don't show your teeth because it's a sign of aggression. So, it's actually kind of high maintenance to work with animals. There are a few moments where I think there's a scene where Patrick slaps me in the face, and we're filming that scene, and obviously we're working with the monkey. The monkey that we were working with, I can't remember which one, he was
How
so intrigued.
How many were there, two?
Yeah, two, Levi and Spencer. And he was so intrigued by what Patrick was doing, he wanted to jump over and do the same exact thing.
And slap somebody in the face?
The wrangler was just like, yeah, exactly. The monkey wrangler was like, no, you can't do that. But, yeah, something that would seem so simple to do really isn't, and requires a lot of rehearsal.
Which the directors of Piñata Survival Island and King Cobra should know by now.
You know? Oh, absolutely. You know, the great thing about those guys, the Hillenbrands, it's funny, like, I'll talk to Worm and Patrick, and I'm like, so what are you guys going to do for the next film, or, you know, whatever the next project is, and they've worked with the Hillenbrands for a while. They did also a film called Game Box, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think when they're writing these scripts, they're always trying to, like, you know, figure out, okay, what's the most absurd thing we can do, and without even flinching, the Hillenbrands are like, yeah, that sounds funny, that's great, you know, we'll do that, like, you know, working with a monkey, or in the next film, without, like, you know, divulging too much. There's some pretty crazy things that happen in this film. I mean,
you don't want to spoil too much, so don't.
Exactly.
I haven't seen it yet, obviously.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen it yet either. I think that's, like, from what I heard, it's, like, about, like, 80%, you know, completed with, like, you know, sound and music and stuff like that. But I'm hearing good things.
I thought it was supposed to be done by September or something with the release date.
Yeah, you know, oddly enough, I'm going into the studio this Friday to do some ADR work, meet up with Alan Branson. I'll see what's going on with the film. But, yeah, I think that sounds about right.
September.
Sounds like a pretty good...
Well, I would hope so, because I'm really, you know, I'm anxious to see it, because I know, you know, they were like, when I had Worm and Patrick on the show, they mentioned, you know, that they were going into, like, they got asked to do a script, and they were like, well, let's just think of this just ridiculous thing that we could do with the Dorm Days people. Let's
right.
do something in Romania. And they're
right.
like, well, Romania is cheap. Let's do it. And then
yeah, Romania was a lot of fun. I think we, you know, when we weren't shooting, we'd go to bars and, like, beers were, like just a little more than a dollar. And, like, you know, not your just, like, average beer, but, like, a 32-ounce beer was, like, over a dollar.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
and, you know, I mean, everybody says Romania. Actually, I've met a lot of Romanian people because I live in Williamsburg, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So I live in, like, a tourist town, but a lot of people come because of all the touristy workplaces.
Okay.
The place I work with is a hotel, which hires a lot of international people.
Sure.
And a lot of Romanians live there, you know, and work there. So, I mean, it's pretty cool, you know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, and yeah. You know, it's funny because, like, you know, I'll meet Romanians now, like, you know, recently, like, since I've been back, and
mm-hmm.
I'll say a few words in Romanian, they're just, like, you know, tripping out because, like, how do you know Romanian? And I'm like, well, I was in Romania filming a movie in school and learned, picked up some, you know, Romanian words, and they have this alcohol called polinka or suica. It's kind of basically, like, you know, American moonshine. Great stuff! But, you know, I ended up drinking a lot of that stuff out there and, you know, having some good meals and talking to some really good people out in Romania.
So you did a lot of partying out there?
Yeah, you know, because, like, this is such a cast-heavy film. There's so many, like, you know, many different, like, intricate stories going on. I think our cast is, oh, God, I don't want to say, like, over 12 or 13 people, and there's, like, you know, several different storylines going on at once. You know, so there's some downtime. 13,
it seems like in the first Dorm Days, there's way so many people, like, you know, it seemed like that many, but it was probably, like, 12 or 13, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
At the time, it seems... like, there's more people, but it's, you know.
Yeah, it seems a lot smaller because, you know, and hence, you know, I have to like, give it to Oren and Jennifer Lyons, who, you know, reprise their roles as Lynn and Rusty. Oren was in the second film, and, you know, he continues on with the third film. But they put on, like, double duty playing two different characters. It should be really interesting to watch how they do that. And I just remember... those two working really, like, long hours because there were a lot of fight scenes and choreography involved, and, you know, it should be a fun film, so.
I really love Jennifer Lyons, like, character, like, but I just, you know, in the second film, I didn't see it coming, you know, with the lesbian twist thing, but I don't know, it just seemed kind of, it seemed kind of awkward, you know, like,
right.
to watch that character, because that character didn't seem, she seemed too dumb to be a lesbian.
I think, yeah, you know, it's funny because, like, you know, you look at her character, Lynn, and she's, like, one of the most sweetest people you'll ever meet, and I think, you know, Lynn is just a very naive person and or character, and, you know, she feels this bond with Marla, and, you know, at the end, you know, she's like, you know, it all makes sense now. We're so close and we know each other and we're lesbians. So, yeah.
No.
You gotta have that.
The whole thing, except she's trying to deny it the whole time.
Right.
You can tell she has it in the back of her mind, though.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, I, you know, like, how I actually, I don't know if you know this, but the, how I found out about Dorm Days is I was a big Boy Meets World fan. Go figure.
Oh, right, with Danielle. Yeah.
With Danielle. And so I looked up Danielle's IMDb, and I saw she was in this movie called Dorm Days. I was like, Dorm Days? And it hadn't even, like, come out yet. It was, like, actually probably it probably just started production or whatever, and they had gotten it up there. So I was like, oh, you know, this sounds kind of interesting.
Sure.
And I was like, who are the writers? You know, like, just interested.
Right.
Because any of their directors are the guys who did Pina and Survival Island. It's like, the writer's got to be comedic.
Yeah.
Cause, you know, because Pina and Survival Island kind of gives you this kind of hokey B-movie feel, you know?
Right, and I've definitely done those. And, you know, I God honest truth, I haven't seen Pinata, but I've only heard stories through, like, a lot of the crew members, because a lot of the crew members from...
I actually own Pinata. Forgive me. But, yeah. No, I mean, I liked it. It's kind of funny. It's cool because I owned it because of Nicholas Brendon, who did Buffy.
Okay.
You know? That was the only reason I really, like, bought it. I didn't even know who these guys were at the time. I didn't even know that they did King Cobra with Pat Morita.
Right.
You know, I had no idea.
Well, yeah, you know, that's the thing. I think, and that's a good thing as far as marketing goes, because, like, you know, everybody knows Danielle, and, you know, you had mentioned, you know, Pat Morita, you know, and
Brendan, who you can say, like, people, I mean, if I went up to a random person and said, do you know Nicholas Brendan, is they're going to say no.
Oh,
but
exactly.
If I say, do you know who Xander from Buffy, is they're going to go yes.
Yeah, you know, I met him once at an audition, and he's, like, one of the sweetest guys. I don't know what he's up to these days, but, like, this was, like, several years ago, and he's, like, really down to earth.
Yeah.
So.
And so he was in Pinata, and he was really cool. Like, he was you know, he was Xander. I don't care. It's just his personality, I think.
So you're a big Buffy fan.
Yeah, I am.
Right on.
I won't
are you reading, like, the Joss Whedon comic?
I haven't read a comic in a while because I don't have enough money to buy comics.
Oh, that sucks, dude. I'm sorry.
Way too much, too many comics in the, you know, I actually have a comic shop right down the street, and I can't actually get the comics because I spend too much on bills and other stuff that I have to pay for, gas, other stuff.
Yeah. I know how that works, man.
I can't actually buy, I have, like, maybe more than 100 comics.
Yeah.
In the box that I, you know, I have to actually pick and choose right now which ones I actually want to go on. And which, actually, I will pretty soon because a friend of mine, or a guy I know, I don't know, like, I can call him a friend, but he wrote for Joss Whedon's Angel.
Oh, sweet.
Joss Whedon's Angel comics. Like, the new ones that are coming out.
Okay.
He wrote, like, a couple issues, and he got asked to do that, and by Joss Whedon himself, so it's kind of
that's
cool.
Awesome. Yeah, you know, like, I'm gonna go to Comic Con at the.
Are you gonna get a chance to meet him?
I'm not sure. Like, I'm there for you know, in support of my buddy who's writing this comic book called Freshman. His name is Hugh Sterbikoff. Him and his buddy, and like, childhood friend Seth Green got together like a year or two ago, and
Seth
and yeah, real cool guy, and they put together this this comic book for Top Cow called Freshman. Check it out. So
I just think it was funny that they made him look like a dick in Entourage.
You know, that's the second time I heard that this week. But he's like, you know, it's just
this
like
week.
Yeah,
what about,
like,
this month?
Well, I know, but, like, it's the same, like, you know, and I have to, like, you know, tell, like, you know, Seth is probably one of
I'm just saying, like, they made him look like that. I'm not saying he is like that. I'm just
saying
they made him look like that. And
absolutely.
He agreed to make himself look like that, so I'm wondering why he would do that.
I think it's just pertinent to the story, you know, like, he's, you know, I guess the character on Entourage, they have, like, this rivalry going with, you know, a girl. So, you know, that kind of just fuels that story.
So, you know, I mean, even though he's not anything like that, he's really cool. He's,
yeah.
You know, doesn't have his own posse that acts stupid.
No,
and,
no.
It made him look stupid.
Really?
Made him look,
I think it's just like, you know, in Entourage, and I think I've seen that episode, and it's just kind of like, you know...
The one in Las Vegas?
It's a satire of, like, you know, what goes on behind the scenes, that sort of thing, you know?
I know, but it just, you know, I thought, because every time I've heard people be interviewed about Seth, they said he's one of the nicest, sweetest guys that you'll ever meet. He's really down to earth. He's really, like, all his characters. He's like Oz from Buffy, you know. He's just really down to earth, really cool, laid back.
Yeah, and he's, like, totally surrounded by, like, really cool guys, like I mentioned, Hugh Sterbikoff, and...
Mm-hmm.
Just a really great guy, like, heart of gold, like, and, I, you know, like, he's, like, one of my friends that I'm just really inspired by because, you know, he's really passionate about his writing, and for him to be able to do that and, you know, reach an audience, it you know, it's very inspiring. I have a good group of friends, and I've been through my frustrations. You were talking about how, you know, you barely have enough money to, like, buy comics, and I've been there. I've been in that situation where, you know, I'm scraping the bottom of the barrel and working some crap job. And, you know, like within the past few years, I've been just really lucky to, like, you know, work these gigs that, you know, allow me to, like, you know, make a humble living and really pursue what I love doing and be able to, like, work with some just amazing, tremendous, like, hardworking, wonderful people. Another thing I should add about, like, Dorm Days 3, like, I'm on this bus ride. We started in Bucharest, which is the capital of Romania, and you know, we had a week in Bucharest at a studio, and then we had to take this bus ride like 8 hours to Transylvania. And I kid you not, dude, like you watch all these, like, you know, old monster movies that take place in Transylvania, and it's really foggy out there. But I'm like riding the bus, and we have this this actor. His name is David Steinberg, really cool guy. He's a little guy, and I don't know if you're familiar with David, but he was the best friend to Willow in the movie Willow. He plays Migosh. And I kept looking at him, not because, like, you know, he's a little dude, but I'm just like, wow, you look really familiar to me. And he's like, yeah, I get that a lot. I'm like, wait a second, were you Migosh in Willow? And it's, like, one of my favorite films. I'm sure it's, like, you know, a lot of people's favorite films.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just a great joy to, like, you know, talk about, you know, his acting career and, you know, what he's done.
You were able to interview him in a way.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was like, it was a great ride. I mean, like, the van was horrible. I mean, like, it was just a horrible bus ride because, like, it was so uncomfortable. But, you know, to meet, you know, David and hang out with him and have dinners with him and even party with him was just great, you know. There are a lot of, like, wonderful people, you know, working on Dorm Days 3, and I couldn't have had a better time, like, artistically and just, you know, like, socially. Unfortunately, there are some people that weren't able to work on the third film that have been on, like, the first or second film, but the people that, you know, David and Scott brought on to work on the third one are just amazing. I can't say enough about them. We have Natalie and Nicole Garza, who are now, like, you know, I guess the new Doublemint twins, and it's a funny story about those two because prior to writing the third one, Warren and Patrick, they're like, okay, so what do you want to do with Wang? Like, you know, do you have any ideas, like, you know, what we should do as far as, like, you know, the kind of things that you want to do? And, you know, first of all, that's really nice for, like, the writers to come and say, hey, like, you know, what direction you want,
right,
you know, Wang to go? And I'm like, you know, really, you know, I totally trust you guys. You know, you guys seem to know what you're doing, and you guys are hilarious at it. But I really like to see Wang get some, like, you know, meet some women and have fun and just, you know.
Right. Actually, I would, too, because, you know, the one thing I've noticed, and I know you're going to continue with the story, but the one thing I noticed is with Dorm Days 1, there wasn't enough Wang. There was mention of Wang, but there wasn't enough of it, you know.
Yeah, and I think, Thank Worm and Patrick because, you know, they totally, you know, made more, like, you know, Wang and Pete in the forefront or, you know, more involved with the story.
I think what happened probably is what you became friends with Worm and Patrick throughout, like, you know, doing the show and doing the movie, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, you became friends with them, and so did Patrick, right?
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Then all of a sudden they were like, well, these are the guys that are probably going to, like, you know, you know, help the movie go along, and then they made you guys become the buddies.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, like, you know, and I think, you know, Patrick Kavanaugh and I have that. You know, we're always, like, you know, messing around, like, in between takes. And,
right.
You know, it might be
actually
fun.
He wished you good luck tonight.
Oh, what's that?
He wished you good luck tonight.
Oh.
Yeah, well, both of us good luck tonight. He can't listen tonight because he's out worming Patrick, actually. You know.
Yeah, I know. Oh, with Kavanaugh.
Yeah, Patrick Kavanaugh.
Oh, good. Yeah, last time I talked to him was, like,
but
a few months ago.
He did want to know if I can ask you if he still wear the leopard print thong.
No, I don't wear the leopard print thong. Unfortunately, you know, I left that, and hopefully somebody burned that. I actually was trying to, at one point, like, before we finished filming, I was going to try to, like, package it and give it to one of our producers, Brian Farber, who just, you know, he just seems like he would love wearing, you know, leopard print thong. Brian Farber's a producer, yeah, exactly, on the film, and, you know, it's like, you know, you rarely get a chance to, you know, I mean, as far as, like, the films I've worked on, you really get a chance to, like, you know, hang out with producers and,
right.
and talk to them. And Brian Farber, love the guy. He was always there, always making sure, like, you know, the actors were safe. And, you know, he would go on, you know, go to these bars and clubs with us and make sure, like, we didn't get in trouble. But he would drink with us and, you know, have a good time. And great guy. Love the guy. But, yeah, it's definitely, if you saw him, you'd probably think, yeah, that guy probably wears the leopard print, you know, thong underwear. but yeah, I'm glad you talked to Patrick. Are you going to be interviewing him?
He's a good guy. Did you see? I have to ask you this: have you seen More Cocaine?
I've seen More Cocaine, and it's hilarious.
Did you really like it? That much? I loved it. I've been showing everybody I could.
I loved it, but now, can I tell you something? Like, you know, let's, like, kind of step away from, like, the whole, like, independent and short story things. He did this film called The Holiday, and he doesn't have, like, you know, huge role, but what
Patrick?
He did. Yeah. I don't know if you've seen it. It stars, like, Cameron Diaz, Jack Black, Jude
what?
Law.
That's
yeah.
A short film?
I'm sorry?
What did you say? I thought you said it was a short film, or was it a movie?
What I was saying is, like, you know, we'll, you know, step away from, like, the whole dorm days thing and,
okay.
and you know, the short films, which is what More Cocaine is.
Yeah.
But when I got back from Romania, I went and saw The Holiday. It's, you know, starts with
Jack Black.
At the end of this film, like, he has this just, like, really small supporting role, but it's just, like, you know, it's funny because, like, I've worked with Patrick now for, like, the past 4 years, and, you know, we've done, like, the Pete and Wang thing, and I've seen him do his comedy and stuff like that, but it was really nice to see Patrick do something different, and he did it so well, and he plays this, you know, this usher at a theater. Like, I think the premise is, you know, they're presenting this Lifetime Achievement Award to this this old Hollywood writer, and he's one of the ushers, and he comes up to the gentleman that's receiving the Lifetime Achievement Award, and it's just, like, this really nice, sweet, genuine performance, and, you know, I couldn't give him more credit because it's such a wonderful role for him, you know?
Right.
But, yes, I did see More Cocaine, and it's great, you know, it's a great little short. I've seen some of your shorts, too, buddy.
Wow.
Like, Dates from Hell? Yeah,
The Date from Hell, yes.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite short, where, like, you know, at the end,
the guy's running around on a bicycle.
Yes, exactly. It looks like he's gonna, like, you know, jump in the car and you see.
No,
he
runs around my niece's little bike. Yes. no, actually, that was all kind of, like, you know, wrote in a day. Even though it was, like, planned out for, like, 2 years.
Right.
Like, I was supposed to do it with other people, and then they backed out, and I was like, you know what? An actual real good script, real good planned out thing, and I was like, you know what? Let's just do it, like, a day, see what we can come up with.
And it worked, right? Like, you never know, like, you know, you obviously know when you're shooting these things, like,
yeah,
can't anticipate anything, you just got to go with it. And,
right. And actually, I want you to do more shorts. I mean,
you know what? There's a buddy of mine, my best friend in the whole world, yeah, if you go on Wang's page, his name is Gary, and his picture is, like, a photo of a Coors Light can. My best friend in the whole world. And you would love his shorts. He does this thing called Gary's Corner and Lion and the Fat Guy. Check him out. It's really funny. It's
so,
like,
do you do stuff with him? Like, do you do?
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I've known him for a long time, and you know, it's funny. Like, most of the shorts that I do with Gary, he's always cast me as like the Asian transvestite hooker for some odd reason. But it's a lot of fun to do, and like, you know, obviously, like, you know, like I said earlier, like, you know, I'm very fortunate to, you know, work these gigs and, you know, provide
right.
myself with a humble living. But like in between those gigs, there's a lot of time, and it's a lot of fun to work with him because he's just always creative and he's always going. And no matter what it is, he's, you know, for the past several years, he's been writing and producing and he does these shorts, and it's just a joy to work with him. And you know what? Like, it's funny because like here's a guy that's only been like acting for, like seriously acting for like the past year and a half, and he's already like booked so many different jobs. He was like a voiceover on Robot Chicken.
Right.
He did
cool.
Flick. Yeah. He's going to be on the Jay Leno show this Friday night, so check him out if, you know, you're around and you're watching Jay Leno. He's going to do some sketch with Jay.
You said this this Friday?
Yeah, this Friday night. Yeah, and you know, you should have him on your show too, because I'm sure he has a lot of...
I mean,
no.
Dude, let him know. I'm interested, dude. I'd love to have him on the show. Actually,
yeah,
check that out. Actually, I'll TiVo that one.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because it should be funny. Like, this guy's fearless, and you know, I think a lot of actors, whether they are just, you know, coming into the business aspect of it or they've been doing it a long time, like they have this thing about like acting, and you know, there's a lot of frustrations that come with it. And
well,
but this,
I mean, isn't that with anything that you're just trying to do? You know, like
absolutely. Like a perfect example. Like I just met this guy the other day. He's my neighbor's boyfriend, but he went to UCLA where I went to, and he was a great outstanding linebacker. His name is Ryan Neese, and he now plays for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But like, here's a guy who had all the talent in the world, did not get drafted. You know, all seven rounds of the NFL draft did not get drafted. But you know, he believed in himself, and he put forth the dedication.
Mm-hmm.
6 years later, he's now starting as an outside linebacker for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's like, that's so inspirational because, you know, there's going to be a lot of doubt no matter what you do, but if you really believe.
So was he trying to go for the Raiders or?
I'm sorry?
Was he trying to go for the Raiders? I mean.
Oh, you know, I'm not sure. I never really asked him. I was talking to him about it yesterday and, you know, he was telling me like, you know, he's starting up training camp.
Well, I guess
Raiders,
you really don't know what you're going to, when you're in the NFL or trying to be in the NFL, you don't really know what they're going to put you.
Exactly.
You know? Like, you don't care if they put you somewhere, anywhere, as
yeah.
long as they give you a professional, you know, job that you got to do and you got to do it well.
And I think it just depends on each team's needs. And you talk about level of competition. I mean, that's like one of the most competitive things in this world or in this country because, you know, there's so little amount of like positions out there and look at it. Like, you know, some teams draft some players in the first or second round and, you know, look what happens, like some of the busts out there. And, you know, maybe that's just like their own mentality. They, you know, couldn't handle the pressure or just couldn't cut it. But like, you know, you look at Todd Marinovich, who also was a Raider and just, you know, he got selected in the first round by the Raiders and, you know, unfortunately, he just didn't excel to everybody's expectations, and you know, didn't do well. So, but you know, kudos to the people that, you know, despite the odds, you know, find a way to
overcome them.
Exactly, you know.
That's, I mean, like you, in a way. Like if you think about it, you've overcome those odds. You're now an actor in the Hollywood films. You've got to be SAG by now, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And
way
you know,
back, you know, so you can actually, I mean, you're a Hollywood actor.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, like, you know, when you asked me about doing this interview, I was like, you know, I was really excited about doing it, but at the same time, it's like, I wasn't sure, like, if I had a lot to say about it, because I really see, like, you know, I don't really think I have that extensive of a career. I've been doing it, like, you know, film and television stuff, like, for the past 10 years, but... You know, I've had some success, and I've had some tremendous failures.
Well, that's even better to be on the show about, because
yeah.
we're talking about all those things. Like, I'm sure we're going to discuss that in the interview.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, man, because, you know, like, I think people, you
actors
know,
especially,
absolutely, like
that. I mean, they need to hear about people who have tried, and then you know stuff happened, but then they finally succeed and get some level of, you know, security.
Yeah, you know, and you know what, and I have like the utmost respect for, you know, people, like whether it's acting or writing or anything, you know, if they want to be a lawyer or a producer or a plumber, you know, like they have these aspirations and just go after it because, you know, I mean, no one's going to hand it to you. That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the bottom line. It's like you have to ask yourself, like, how much it means to you, what it means to you, what are you willing to sacrifice? And it's just, it's not me, like, saying, hey, like, this is what I've done, this is what I've had to do to, you know, get where I'm at. And but it's just, you know, that's the bottom line. As far as acting, I think, you know, you really have to be passionate about it and know that, yes,
this is what you have, this is what you're destined to do.
Exactly. Like, you want to do this, well, okay, you know what? You got to have the talent to back that up. What's that entail? You got to take, you know, the acting classes, and you really have to, you know, love being on a set for anywhere between, like, I don't know, 8 and 16, 17 hours, and, I don't know, you know, forego some things and, you know, find a job that, like, will, you know, supplement, you know, your income while you're pursuing your dreams. And I've been there. You know, I think you have to remember it's also a business, you know. Unfortunately, that's the reality of, you know, acting in film or television. It is a business, and you have to network, and you have to do these things that, you know, you're not accustomed to doing, or, like, you know, like in my case, like talking about myself. It's just, you know, it's a weird thing, but, you know, there are many people out there that have this, you know, just this dream of going out there and doing it despite what the odds are. When I got into acting, it was fairly when I was, like, pretty early, and I think I had a big chip on my shoulder. Like, I think I was, like, really young, and I remember going to, like, career day, meeting with my high school counselor, and she was saying something like, you know, so what do you want to do with your life, Paul? Like, you know, do you have any big plans? I'm like, you know, I'm really curious about acting, and you know, I think I want to kind of, like, pursue that or explore that option. And she's like, well, you know, acting for anybody is really, really difficult. You know, it's there's a lot of adversity and there's a lot of instability. And I got that. And she's like, you know, especially for, you know, you being an Asian American. And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. You know, I'm like, I thought, like, this whole, like,
did that not come out racist a little bit?
I don't want to say that. You know, I think you know, back in that time, I'm older, so, like, back in that time, I'm not saying that it was okay, but, you know,
it was a little bit more tolerated, I guess.
At the time, was just, like, you know, bluntly saying, hey, you know, these are the things that you're going to have to face. And, you know, quite honestly, I mean, I understand what she was trying to say, or, you know, trying to tell me or warn me about. And I remember ending that conversation with, like, you know, thank you very much. I really appreciate that, you know. And it was weird because back in high school, you know, I was part of the drama class, the drama club or whatever, and, you know, on this, you know, this cork board or billboard, there was this, like, you know, advertisement for, you know, Los Angeles County High School of the Arts. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like something I might be interested in because, you know, I can go to the high school and, you know, focus on my studies, but you know, focus more on or have more time to focus on exploring, you know, acting or theater or whatever. And so, oddly enough, like 2 weeks later, like, I sent out the application and had an audition for the school and got accepted, and it was, like, my sophomore year in high school, and that was that. And my parents didn't know what to make of it. They thought it was probably, like, just a passing phase. But, you know, I went, and I had a great time, you know. And that's, like, a whole other issue. It's, like, you know, your parents. I think, like, most parents, they want their kids to go into something very stable, and that'll make them, you know, a lot of money, and, you know, they can raise a family of their own someday. And, you know, God bless my parents. I love them a great deal. But at first, they did not agree with, like, you know, my choice in life. It took a long time. And talking about this, it's great because, like, I'm able to reflect on, like, what it took to to get where I'm at right now, and I feel like I'm barely like scratched the surface, but I was able to experience a lot of different things and really fight for what I really wanted to do in life. And, you know, so they came and saw some plays, and they're like, yeah, that's cool, you know, whatever. But when it came time to, like, you know, apply for colleges, they're like, okay, you know, Paul, drop this whole acting thing and, you know, get into, you know, medicine or something. And not in that frame of mind at the time. I was, like, really,
so they
really
wanted
pumped
to be a doctor?
Yeah, they had hopes of me being a doctor or a lawyer, you know, so they can brag about, you know, their kid at, you know, when they went to church.
So, I mean, would you say that you were like John Cho and, you know, White Castle? And, you know, Harold and Kumar go to White Castle, kind of?
You know, that's a funny thing, because I auditioned for that film, and John does a great job in that film.
Yeah.
I guess to a certain degree, I can definitely relate to that film, but, you know, I don't, like, normally smoke out a lot.
I'm not saying that. Well, especially if you go to your character in Dorm Days 2, compared
right.
to your,
oh, yeah,
your character in Dorm Days 1, it became a little bit different. Right?
Yeah, no, it's definitely one of those things. I definitely felt the pressure from my parents. And, you know, it's such a you know, difficult thing because, like, my parents immigrated here back in, God, like the late 60s. And they have these high hopes of just, you know, working so hard and then providing, you know, like me and my sister, a good education and doing really well and you know, achieving our dreams. But I think at that time they were just like, well, you know, their dreams, well, they thought my dreams would be their dreams, and I totally went like the opposite direction. I had a lot of fun, you know, I think my personal choice as far as like career choices go, I really want to love what I do, and I do that, as frustrating as it can be sometimes, because, you know, I've had some horrible auditions, and I've had some great auditions and whatnot, but I'm really doing what makes me happy, and ultimately, towards the end, like, my parents realize, like, how happy I am just doing what I'm doing, and they're cool with it because, you know, I'm making a humble living, and I can support myself, so not as worried. But I love them to death. I understand where that comes from because they just want to make sure that, you know, I can take care of myself. And if like one day, like that's the dream, like one day to, you know, have a family of my own one day, but at the same time not like have to give up what I'm so passionate about doing, which is acting. I was at this party like for 4th of July at my friend Reggie Jordan's house, and you know, he's a family man. He's married. He's got two kids, and you know, he's acting. He's acting like, you know, he's booked a lot of gigs, and that's the dream right there. Like, you know, he's like one of the guys like in my circle I just like look up to because, you know, he's happy doing what he's doing. Yet at the same time, he's able to like, you know, have a family and support them. You know, and that's inspiring. My parents, you know, it took about 15 years before they, you know, said, hey, you know, you can actually do this, and we believe in you, and we support you. But
well, for a while, I mean, were they scared, or?
Oh, yeah, man, like when I was in high school close to graduating, I actually, like, you know, had to run away from home to, like, kind of prove my point, like, this is what I want to do, this is the only thing that's going to make me happy, and, I ran away and hung out with a friend, you know, that was living in Pasadena, and I hadn't talked to my parents that whole time until, like, towards the end, and they were like, okay, you know what, we love you, we just want you to get your education, you know, get your degree, that's all that matters. If you want to pursue acting, cool, but get your degree, and I said, you know what, that's a cool compromise, so I ended up going to UCLA and getting my degree in theater and specializing in acting, and they came out and saw a couple shows. But at the same time, I think in, like, the back of their head, they were like, you know, wow, you know, can he really do this? And it wasn't until, you know, I was working on some, you know, like, little bit roles on television, but it wasn't until, like, a film that I worked on that was, like, real special to my heart called One Hour Photo that starred Robin Williams that they said, okay, you know, you can do this.
So it wasn't until a real professional film that...
Exactly. But, you know, that's...
They were like, you know, you're with Robin Williams in this movie. You know what? You can do this.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like, my parents did, like, a total 180. And it's funny because, like, back in the day, like, I think they were kind of sheepish about explaining to their friends at church, like, you know, my friend, my son's doing or pursuing acting, and he's doing, theater and not really getting paid for it. But
weren't you with Jack Frost too, though?
Yes, I did. That was so many years ago, and oddly enough, that's where I met Jennifer Lyons.
No offense. I mean, it's not that I haven't watched it. It's not because you know, because because it's a sequel. It's because the first one really wasn't that good. I didn't really like the first one.
Well, I don't think the second one was that much better, but
wasn't it set in like Hawaii or something?
Yeah, it was some tropical setting. And
how did this, how did Jack Frost not melt?
I think he took it's been so many years.
Steroids?
that film. Okay, so for those, you guys aren't watching Harry Potter and stuck in some theater watching Harry Potter, or listening to the show, Jack Frost 2 is about it's
Killer Snowman.
Yeah, exactly. And I think if I recall correctly, he took some sort of antifreeze, like he was submerged in 40 antifreeze. Yeah, exactly. And he came back, oddly enough.
Wait. I thought that would be the thing. Like, he melted away in the first one? Because I didn't really finish the first one. I got bored.
You know, I have never saw the... Well, I saw the second one, but only the parts that I was in. So, you know, there you go.
You bored it?
Two things about Jack Frost 2. One, Michael Cooney, who wrote and directed the Jack Frost films, he went on to do bigger and greater things, but he loved that storyline. I think he wanted to make a big series out of it, but I don't know if you're familiar with Michael Cooney's work. He went on to write this film called Identity that starred John Cusack and Clay Duvall.
You wrote that?
Yeah, and
oh my
crazy
that he wrote that and he did Jack Frost 2.
You see, that's the thing. It's like you never know, you know, and there are a lot of people out there that have so much talent. And
Brian Helgeland, who wrote for Nightmare on Elm Street 4.
Exactly.
Actually went and, which is a great, I love Nightmare on Elm Street 4. I hate A Night's Tale.
Yeah, I never saw it, but, if it's anything like Jack Frost...
You never know who's going to write and direct stuff, whatever.
Right, exactly. And, last I heard, Michael Clooney's doing, he has, two other films in the works and should be pretty good. But, whether it's, Jack Frost 2 or, Identity or, something great, everybody has a beginning. And that's what I love about, being a character actor. Because, prior to, doing One Hour Photo, I have, a small supporting role in One Hour Photo, but, I never really, gravitated towards these supporting characters. I would always see, the lead actors in these films, but having that experience as, a supporting character and seeing, all these, love-to-do actors, playing the leads, but, also seeing, years ago, prior to, becoming a lead,
especially with Dorm Days. I mean, you're one of the leads. There are many leads in that movie, though. I mean,
I appreciate that. It's funny because I always find myself I always see myself as one of the supporting characters, and I love that because in no way, shape, or form I see myself as leading man, whatever.
Well,
I love playing.
I mean, who is the leading man? I mean, were you saying Numares?
I would say because, he started out this whole story, and it's he's, the everyday sort of guy, and you want to root for him, and I love Tony.
Actually, everybody called me Newmar after they watched that movie. I was like, stop it, just because I wear glasses.
Yeah,
I mean,
you got the girl at the end, right?
I'm white, and I have brown hair.
Did you get the girl at the end?
I didn't. That's the problem. So far, I haven't gotten... Maria Delfino, is that her name?
Yeah, I saw her recently. We were shopping at Whole Foods in Santa Monica.
Nice.
And she looked great. She's doing well.
Oh, was she in Dorm Days 3? Yeah.
She was in Dorm Days 2. Originally, she was supposed to be slated to do Dorm Days 3, but I think there was some sort of work scheduling conflict. And what happened with that is that you know, everything works out for a reason. But that character was supposed to be, I think Maria Delfino was supposed to do the, if I'm correct, what are the names in the film in part 3? Leah and Danny. And she was supposed to, play like two different people, like sisters. But she had another project, I think, and that's when the Hillenbrands brought in Natalie and Nicole, and they're wonderful. There was a moment where we were in Deva, which is a city in Transylvania, and granted, like I have to explain, like, you know, my overall experience in Romania was wonderful. I loved everybody that I had met.
Before you really get into the story, I just want to mention one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a few people, and then I've also heard from a director, Lee Scott, who's directed a bunch of stuff for The Asylum. I don't know if you ever heard of them.
No.
They did, like, movies like H.G. Wells' World of Worlds, and they did
that. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Like, not the big, big War of the Worlds with Steven Spielberg, but...
Right.
You know, yeah.
Right.
They've done, like, the kind of the knockoff kind of...
Okay.
But not like, they don't do it on purpose. They do it because they're pretty much paid to do these. Kind of cool. They did Transmorphers.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah.
You heard of it, right?
No, but that's funny because, like, my friend Gary, instead of Planet of the Apes, he directed a short film called Planet of the Grapes.
Well, no, these guys do actual big movies that are in Blockbuster and stuff.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
No, I haven't.
So anyway, he got a chance to direct a movie in Romania.
Mm-hmm.
Lee Scott did, and he directed a movie in Romania that was done through for Sci-Fi Pictures and stuff. And he was doing this movie up there, and he said that apparently that the dogs out there are wild.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, he wrote a whole blog about different stuff, and one of the things was they're wild dogs, like crazy wild dogs. Like, you're more scared, not because you're going to run into Dracula, but you're going to run into wild dogs.
You know what, and I can definitely vouch for what he said, because... You know, Natalie and Nicole, they pretty much adopted this, like, you know, this stray, and they actually found a good home for this dog. But there are a lot of dogs out in Romania, yes, they haven't been fixed, and they're just roaming wild and fornicating out in the woods and, you know, making babies. So, you know, it's
making
it's,
more dogs to be wild.
Exactly. It's quite a thing to see, actually, because, you know, wow, they're just living free. They don't care who's watching. They're just living free and having a good old time out in Romania. But
also, have you been to McDonald's down there?
Oh yes, I have been to McDonald's there. Like, that was like a once a week sort of thing for me. I was out there for like 6 weeks, so I probably.
Well, the McDonald's that you went to did in like, I don't know if it was Transylvania or Romania.
They're both. There's a McDonald's out in Transylvania, and
The one thing I'm wondering about is, because he mentioned that you can actually smoke in McDonald's.
I never smoked inside, because I smoke. I never smoked inside the McDonald's. A lot of people do smoke in Romania. It's like being on a set 24/7.
Right.
But yeah, I never smoked inside
they can, and that they can also drink beer there in McDonald's.
Yeah. You know, the rules might have changed, because when I was there, there was, like, no smoking or drinking beers of any sort. Like,
wow, that's kind of weird, because he says that, and then all of a sudden...
Well, how long
but no, but I also talked to another person that was actually from Romania, and he said, no, the McDonald's, you can't do that.
Yeah, no, you know what? It's funny, because, like, McDonald's is a big deal in Romania. I just have to point that out. Like what you get out here for, you know, a Happy Meal costs probably much the same thing in Romania. Like, really, like, you know, if you have a bit of money, you can go to McDonald's and have a great meal, I guess. But that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's just, it costs. Like I was telling you earlier, how, like, beers, like a 32-ounce beer probably costs, like, $1, $1.25. Well, you know what?
32-ounce?
Yeah, exactly.
That's
pretty good.
40-ounce.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you're 8 ounces away, so... but yeah, that's the thing. It's like, you know, I think, you know, local domestic products out there are, you know, nice. They're affordable, or, you know, way more than affordable. But, as far as like, you know, things that they ship in internationally, it's pretty much like what you're going to pay in the States. Like, I remember having a shot because I didn't really pack according to the weather out there. It was pretty cold, although they said it was a pretty warm winter for them. But I remember having a shot out, like, you know, a good chunk of change for, like, you know, a good pair of boots. And they were like, they were like Caterpillars. And I, you know, pretty much paid for, you know, those boots, like the same amount that I would pay out here. It's just the domestic things that are like
a little bit different.
Exactly. So, you know, I had a good time, you know, drinking with the cast mates and crew members, and, you know, the remaining people are just really wonderful, wonderful, like, culture. They appreciate, like, the simplest things in life, and, you know, I was able to, like, you know, had I not chose acting, I probably would have been, like, a cultural anthropologist, and I was very lucky enough to, you know, be invited to people's homes and have dinner with them and talk about their economic state, and they're just, like, right now transferring over to the EU, which is, you know, the euro, and it's changing their country and the economic status of their country, like, greatly. It'll be a few years before they make that transition, but, you know, it's much more like a simpler lifestyle sort of thing. They don't really worry about, like, who's got what. It's just, like, you know, making a living and having a family, and those are the priorities. I met some really good, you know, people in Romania, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, a lot of friends I still keep in touch with, and hopefully we'll keep in touch with for the rest of my life. But
I mean, that's really cool.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. That's the great thing about, like, acting. It's like it can take you anywhere, and you never know. You know, most of my gigs I've worked in Los Angeles. Some gigs, like, you know, have taken me across the country. But, you know, to be in Romania, it was just a wonderful treat. And I thank the Hillenbrands for that. I thank Worm and Patrick.
I especially thank Worm and Patrick for, like, suggesting it. I think I mentioned to you earlier, like, he like, they were both thinking about, you know what, if we're going to do a movie, we're going to do it our way. Like, the way that they discussed it with me, that they were, like, thinking, you know what, we're going to do a horror movie where everybody's dead.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's what they wanted. Like, they wanted just end-all, be-all, you know, Dorm Days movies. Everybody dies. It's awesome. It's
right.
Funny.
No, that was the original idea, too, and, like, I would have loved to have done that, but you know what, like, I'm really happy with what I've experienced and seeing doing the third one.
You have seen He Stop Stab Me, right?
Yeah. In fact, I saw that, like, while Patrick and Worm were still living together, and they pulled out the
They're not living together anymore?
You know, I think they live fairly close to one another, but they're in a good position where they can, you know, live on their own and, you know, not have any roommates and sort of that sort of thing. But they're, like, the best friends. You know, they're brothers, basically. So, yeah. But they live fairly close to one another.
Okay, I would hope so.
Like, yeah, no.
They're still running companions, though, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure being roommates after a while, though, and being running partners, you gotta have your space.
Absolutely. But, you know, like I said, like, you know, in some quirky sort of way, they kind of complete each other. And you know, they're both from Minnesota,
right.
Sweetest guys, you know, I haven't had a chance to, like, hang out with Patrick Casey, a lot, but, like, you know, hanging out with Worm, we've definitely had those times where we bonded, especially over drinking and, you know, having a good time and just talking about, like, what we want to do and that sort of thing. Like, I really have to thank Worm because, you know, like, I didn't really have that much to do on the first one, so I was, like, kind of unsure, like,
Hello? Hello?
What the fuck happened?
Hey, guys, guess what? Apparently, Paul just left the building for right now, but hopefully he'll call back in a second. So anyway, Paul's Oh, wait, hold on a second. Paul?
Yeah, I'm here.
Did your phone cut off?
What's that?
Did your phone cut off or something, or?
I don't know. Like, I just got this message. We're experiencing technical difficulties.
But now it's Blog Talk Radio, right? Or?
Yeah, exactly. That was Blog Talk. It wasn't my phone. It was just like, hey, we're experiencing technical difficulties.
Are you kidding? It was Blog Talk that did that to you?
Yeah, I think it was. I think.
I'm sorry. Like,
no,
it didn't do anything with me. Like, I'm still on here. I was like, what? I thought I like, clicked you off or something. I was like,
No, that's all good, man. It's all good. Yeah, I don't know where we left off. I think we're talking about Worm. And
yeah, we're talking about Worm and Patrick just being friends and being, like,
great guys, dude. There have been a few moments where, you know, just heartfelt talks, and, you know, I think those guys know how hard it is. They can definitely relate because, you know, prior to running Dorm Days, they were, you know, like, I think Worm was working at Subway, and Patrick was working at, like, Blockbuster or something like that.
Yeah, that's how he helped.
Exactly.
Those guys, and which is kind of cool, like, that you can randomly meet these producers and they'll actually help you out.
Exactly.
That was what was great about my interview with them, was, like, getting that information, which is something that you can see online, but still, I mean, cool to hear.
They know. I think that's the thing. It's like, you know, they know their beginnings and how far they've come, and I couldn't be, like, more prouder of those two because, you know, essentially they just have, like, great hearts. You know, they always think about others before themselves, and, you know, I think both Worm and Patrick, you know, they've written themselves in the films, and they do a wonderful job in all the Dorm Days films.
Yeah, I mean, I love their roles in the Dorm Days films.
Yeah, it'll be funny, like, you know how I was mentioning, I was talking to Worm, and we're talking about, like, you know, what, you know, they had asked me, they had confronted me as far as, like, what they want to see, what I want to see as far as, like, you know, the evolution of Wang's character, and
right.
I'm like, you know, yeah, we should have Wang, like, just be a pimp, but, you know, oddly enough, that went out the window, and they made it a lot funnier. Patrick Kavanaugh gets all the girls, and I don't. That's the funny thing, and there's, like,
an intimate moment. Does Patrick really get all the girls in the movie, or...
He doesn't get all the girls, but, like, he gets the important girls, and,
Who did he get in the movies?
He starts out with, I think he starts out with Nicole, who plays Danny.
Oh, is this in Dorm Days 3?
Yeah, this is Dorm Days 3, and he ends up with Natalie, who plays Leah, and I end up somehow having an intimate moment with, Worm's character, Brady.
Nice.
And, you know, he just wrote that just in spite of me. So, you know, that's Worm.
Actually, it does sound like something he would write.
Yeah, exactly, right?
And, like, something goofy and silly and weird and...
Yeah.
Not something that you would actually normally see and expect.
Well, I have to tell you this. Like, you know, you think, you know, I was telling you how Worm is, like, the biggest sweetheart in the world. Like, he, you know, you think, like, with his character Brady, he would be ever so gentle with me. But, you know... Nothing could be further with the truth, you know, from the truth. He's really aggressive, and, yeah, it was pretty hot. We share a hot moment together in the film.
No.
You there?
Yeah. Are you here?
It's just kind of breaking up a little bit.
Actually, I'm kind of breaking up a little bit, too, but...
Oh, sorry about that. I barely can hear you. Maybe I should call back again in, like, a minute.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, but it's, like, breaking up, so we'll see. You know, hopefully the connection will get
a lot
better.
You want to call back a second?
You there?
No. You want to call back a second?
Yeah, I'll call back. Damn you, Harry Potter. You suck. Okay, later.
Okay. Wow. Another great moment in Blog Talk Radio. Maybe if they see what's going on here, they will fix everything. That's wrong. Whatever. Anyway, Paul should be called back in, and everything should be fine soon. If not, I've got other plans to fix this. right, I'm going to be talking to you on my cell phone right now. And then Paul should be calling in soon. So, we'll see how this goes. Let's put this here. Hello? Sorry about this. Things have just been pretty crazy today, but here we go. Paul, if you can hear me, I'm just trying to get you on right now. For some reason, my computer's acting up. So, hey, Paul?
Yeah.
Hey, okay. You're here. All
right, good, man.
Okay, sorry, I had to turn to my cell because my actual, landline was acting crazy.
Oh, cool.
So, I'm going to my cell for a little bit. My cell phone's running out of battery, so my other phone won't be able to take over in a second, but
okay.
It was just acting up. That was maybe the big breaking up. I thought it was my cell phone. It was my landline. So.
Okay.
It's okay. Whatever. We'll fix it all up.
Absolutely, man.
I just want to let you know, I know I mentioned Asylum before, which is a company in L.A.,
mm-hmm.
And I think you should really try to look them up. They got a website called asylum.cc, or theasylum.cc.
Cool, man.
I think they don't do any really, comedy or anything.
Right.
They do actual, they do more horror, sci-fi stuff, you know.
Sci-fi stuff. I'm totally cool. I'm totally down with that. I love the sci-fi.
Yeah, because, and they're really good. And but you should really check them out because they did a movie I just watched recently called The Apocalypse.
Okay.
Which is pretty much about the end of days, like Left Behind and all that.
Cool, man. I'll definitely check them out.
Yeah, but it's got a really cool scene with some people getting their heads chopped off from asteroids.
Hey, man, you know what? You'll definitely like the next installment of Dorm Days because there's some stuff that's kind of comparable to that sort of thing. We do some
really?
Stuff. Yeah, I don't know if how much Worm and Patrick told you, but there's some pretty cool stuff. And we had this makeup artist named Vincent Guastini who just tore it up, dude.
Wait a minute.
Special.
I've heard of him. He's on MySpace and stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. He's done movies like Dogma. I don't know.
Yeah, he did Dogma. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
A lot of
really cool stuff. Guy. But he does some wonderful stuff. There's, not to not to divulge too much stuff, but he does some really cool special effects stuff as far as the makeup goes, and really talented guy. Really works hard and really cares about what he does, and it was a real joy to work with him, and we got him on the next installment of Dorm Days, and looking forward to how it all just pans out on film, You there?
Yeah, I'm here. but yeah, dude, that's awesome. What else is going on?
Yeah, I can barely hear you, bro.
Oh man. Hey, dude.
Yeah, yeah, speaker.
Hey, can you hear me better?
What's that?
Can you hear me better?
Oh, yeah, much better.
Okay, sorry. I had to get rid of my cell phone. It was my cell phone was killing the show right there.
Yeah.
I could all of a sudden hear me. I was like, what?
What's going on?
Yeah, echo. Vincent, I've seen him on, on MySpace, and I've seen his artwork, and it's really impressive.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I can imagine the stuff that he's doing for you guys.
Yeah, he's been in the business for a long time, and, it's nice to see that, he's always constantly busy and working. That's always good to hear, because he really loves what he does. Like I said, he's a really good guy. He just does, some really wonderful special effects makeup for the film. And, when it comes out, I think it'll be indicative of, the fruits of his labor. So, it'll be cool, man.
I'm really excited to hear about all this stuff because, knowing Worm and Patrick and knowing their, because I'm supposed to do an amazing Schlock show soon.
Okay.
And even though all I've seen from them is pretty much he stopped stabbing me or Magma Head.
Yeah.
So I haven't really watched all their old stuff. I'm sure. Have you seen all their old stuff? Like.
You know, the oldest thing I've seen is like what you mentioned earlier, which is "Hey, you stop stabbing me." And it's funny, you know. I love what they do, and they're a couple of quirky guys. But you know, in the future they'll come out with some really cool stuff that's like, you know, probably more mainstream. I think, I'm not sure, we'll see. But there's definitely like an evolution
I think
in their work.
Even "Hey, Stop Stabbing Me" is kind of mainstream. I mean, they don't try to be independent. Try to be, no. I mean, of course they had like zero budget, but
absolutely.
They showed a great deal of work, and I'm very proud of them.
Yeah, you know, me too. And I'm like, you know, more than anything, I'm just really happy to call them some, you know, like my friends, because they're really just great guys. A great guy to work
hang out with, right? You know,
maybe. Yeah, you know, there was a moment, like, there's a funny story, like, we were all supposed to, like, you know, me, Worm, and Patrick, we were all supposed to go watch Biker Boys one night. And,
God. And just laugh,
no, right?
At it. We're watching drunk.
It was one of those things where, you know, you try to catch as many films as possible, and we were drinking Southern Comfort that night, and unfortunately, we didn't make it because we were, I think it was at some mall, and we had been drinking quite heavily, and I was the one who dropped the bottle of Southern Comfort. It was pretty much empty by that point, but like, we were in the food court waiting to watch Biker Boys, and it just didn't work out. The bottle shattered, and we were really embarrassed, and we just took off. But so, yeah, it was just one of those moments. So, good times.
Good times, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, those guys, you know, whether it's working with them or just hanging out with them, they're just a complete joy to be with, you know. I remember there were sometimes in Romania, and we're just having a good time after a long day shoot, and you know, we can talk about anything pretty much, and we definitely did that. We had a great time. So hopefully, you know, wherever my career takes me, you know, I'll be synonymous with those two, because they're a couple of great guys.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I liked them. I loved you know, because how I met you was basically through them. So
yeah,
I mean,
you guys talked for like 3 hours supposedly, right?
What?
You guys talked like in
the show. I mean, we talked for 3 hours. But did you talk to them about that show at all?
Yeah, they just told me that they had a great time talking with you and bouncing off like a bunch of stuff.
Did. And let's see, like, through the whole career, I have been following them because since of dorm days, I had went to their amazing Schlock stuff, and I started talking to Worm through email about movies and movie making and stuff, you know, asking secrets and whatever they can divulge. And then all of a sudden I saw that Patrick was on MySpace, and he was the first one on there, I guess. And then Worm got on there. I was like, oh my God, both of them are on there. That's awesome.
Right.
So I was like, so I talked to Worm, and, you know, just like how you're saying, like, I'm more friends with Worm, I guess, now than from Patrick. It wasn't that Patrick's not a nice guy. I think Patrick's awesome. It's just,
oh, he's a great guy.
Worm is different. He's just a more approachable guy about stuff. He's the one who emailed me through the Amazing Schlock stuff, and he's the guy.
Yeah, I think like Patrick, he's just like, you know, a big sweetheart. He's kind of shy. You know,
yeah,
good guy. But you know, Worm definitely have like, you know, that history with, and you know, rather than just joking around, we definitely talk about some like, you know, poignant things as far as like what's going on in our lives and you know what we want to do. That's not to say that, you know, Patrick's not the same way, because Patrick is very passionate about what he does, and, you know, he has very, sincere goals as far as what he wants to do. It's just, you know, we don't know each other that, like, on that level as, like, Worm and I do, but, you know, he's pretty much Worm without, like, all the, you know.
Sameness.
Late night drinking and crying to one another. That sort of thing, you know. So, but I have to give it up to those two, because you know they're essentially these like two guys that have like, you know, big dreams, and they're pursuing them, and I couldn't have any more like respect for those guys because they're doing it, you know, and they should be really proud of what they're doing. As you know, like I said, like, you know, in my circle of friends, I draw a lot of inspiration from my friends because I've been, you know, I've known them for a while or even, you know, a short while, but, you know, they're going after it. Like, it's so easy to succumb to this fear and frustration that we all have, whether it's like, you know, with hacking or, you know, going to med school or whatever. But, you know, everybody I know that I've worked with or, you know, have fun with, you know, they have sincere and genuine goals and they're doing it. And that provides a great amount of inspiration to me because it's like, you know, these are my boys. And I know what it's like to like really want something and go after it. And it may not turn out the way you expect it to be or hope it to be, but you know, it might even be greater than that. I've been doing it a long time and by far, I don't think like I'm exactly where I would love to be, you know, which is working a lot more, but, I really appreciate the experiences and, you know, the projects that I've worked on. I met some really wonderful, incredible people. Whether these are people that I've worked with or people are just getting out of like, you know, like theater school, that excitement and, you know, having done this for a while, like sometimes that excitement changes and you get a little bit jaded because of, you know, you have some setbacks or, you know, an audition doesn't turn out the way you'd hope it would, you know, book that role. But, you know, I'm much happier trying than not trying.
Right. You know, the big question I have for you is, are, you know, this can sound kind of funny, but are you a big fan of Entourage?
You know, I am. I am because, I mean, I know it's a satire of, like, what goes on behind the scenes. But, you know, I definitely can relate to those moments, you know, with agents and fellow actors that do really well. Sometimes it comes easy to people. Sometimes it doesn't. I haven't seen a lot of this season's or last season. I own, like, I think season one. You have to understand, like, I think I remember telling you how, like, when you had, like, first approached me to do this interview, like, I'm, like, technologically challenged, and I'm like, what do I need for this interview and that? Do I have to
Well,
you know, I you have to understand, like, I finally...
You're not the only person who's ever asked that, so don't...
Thank you. I finally, like, once I got back from Romania, I finally, like, subscribed to cable, and I was so stoked, like, one of the shows that I wanted to see, like, after, like... subscribing to cable is, you know, watching Entourage. I think it's a great show. So your question was, as far as, like, you know, Entourage is...
Yeah, just, are you a fan, I guess?
Yeah, I'm a big fan. I met, I think, the guy that plays Turtle through another friend.
Turtle?
Yeah, I met, I think his name is Jerry. I'm not sure.
Ferrara.
Yeah, he's a great guy, real nice guy, real down to earth. Real. Like,
have you actually met him, like...
Yeah, I was at a buddy's house up here in L.A., and we were all playing Halo, oddly enough. But a real cool guy, real shy, I think, you know, but a real nice guy.
Hey, but, you know, gosh, if I were around you, I would have been like, dude, ask him if you ever played Fight Night.
Oh, no. Is that
have you ever seen
the
episode?
No.
He had to play... Fight Night, but he was supposed to do it when he's not high. And he could only play people when he was high.
Ah, that's hilarious.
Yeah. it was a good episode, but...
Oh, right on. Yeah, no, I definitely need to, like, get, like, you know, seasons two and season three, because I think I missed out on a lot of stuff. I only caught probably, like, the first couple of episodes of season three, which I thought were hilarious. I really love Jeremy Piven. I think he's a wonderful actor, and all those guys on that show are wonderful. They're a lot of joy to like watch. Yeah, man. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I'm a big fan of Entourage. I'm a big fan of God. What are the shows I'm watching now? Hell's Kitchen.
Are you watching Hell's Kitchen now?
No, that's on Monday night, so, you know, can't watch it right now.
Well, not right now, I'm saying. You're watching
exactly.
Hell's.
But, I'm a big fan of what's that guy, that Shepard?
Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, and yelling and screaming at everybody because I just think it's so comical.
Well, it's funny because my mom's a big fan of that show, and she made me watch it and whatnot, and with my dad. It's freaking Fox is addicting as hell. On the lot, it's the same damn thing as Hell's Kitchen. It's the same damn show. Except
oh, really?
Not screaming at somebody.
Yeah, I haven't seen On the Lot, but I'm hearing good things about it. I just think,
all my friends were wondering why I didn't do it. And after watching all these shorts that I've said, I watched, I was like, man, I could beat some of these people, but some of these people are actually really good. And I'd rather have them win anyway,
Right.
There's this guy on there that's actually doing really well. He's a special effects guy.
Okay.
And if he doesn't win, I'll be shocked. His shorts are so much better than anybody else's. And he's so much, funnier than anybody else.
Yeah. And,
I know it's not just comedy, but... Geez, he's a much better filmmaker than they are. And
yeah, I don't know. It's weird. The whole makeup of what show or what project does well. I mean, the one time I checked out On the Lot, I'm sure it's doing really well. But I saw some guy doing some short on these cavemen and they're driving in a Mustang, and I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I guess that's kind of a commercial.
Oh
idea.
God, that wasn't that one that was the taxi thing.
Yeah.
Oh, that was awful.
Yeah, and I was just that's cool. It's a commercial or something
It wasn't
really
a cave, was it? It was some...
It was I think the Mustang was some sort of time machine and, transcends all time because, cavemen...
It was a pretentious piece of shit, right?
Yeah, so...
That's what a lot of those are.
Yeah, I just don't get it,
I love the George Lopez
show.
If you got it, then it wouldn't be pretentious.
Right. But see, that's the thing, I loved the George Lopez show, but, I guess, now it got, replaced by those guys that made the Geico commercials, and I don't get that, I don't know, man.
They're the ones who are responsible if a caveman can do it.
Exactly. Anybody can, sort of thing,
Yeah.
So easy a caveman can do it, but, obviously it's pertinent because we're talking about it now. I don't know.
Obviously it's bad, so we're talking about...
Yeah, the other reality show I watch is American Chopper because I just love the titles and what they do.
I thought you were going to say American Idol. No.
Oh, no. It's funny, I don't know. I think I got into American Idol, the first couple seasons, but... I don't know, it's just weird.
Actually, I got into it probably in the third or so season or whatever. Was it on
fifth
or something? Fourth or fifth.
Okay.
But I got into it late, and I didn't hate it, but what I realized is you can't watch American Idol alone.
Yeah. No, you got to have, it's kind of like watching Survivor.
You have to watch it with a group. You have
to.
Or at least one other person, because otherwise... It gets really boring fast.
Well, I think the good thing about those shows is that, I'd watch those shows, and I think the most important thing that comes from those shows is, the level of competition and what it takes to, succeed, I guess. And you really have to put forth a lot of effort and a lot of sacrifice and discipline. A lot of people that, times, years past, I've watched American Idol, and, they go through the, preliminary thing, and the people that are slackers, don't really continue going on to the next round. And I think the people that are successful are the ones that, really put forth the effort, dedicate, a lot of their time and their passion towards, achieving whatever goal that, they set out for themselves. So, yeah, in that respect, it's a cool thing. It's a cool thing to watch and realize how much pressure there is involved because... I've definitely felt that pressure on myself, working certain gigs and stuff like that.
And but, I think that's the thing with On the Lot is people are going to, because they tried that with Project Greenlight.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you watch Project Greenlight at all.
Yeah, I just got cable, January.
Oh, well.
you know, my friends are giving me a lot of flack. They're like, you know, they'll say, like, you know, welcome.
Well, I thought you'd at least get the DVDs. I'm sure you got DVDs.
Yeah, I should. You know, I don't know.
Rent the DVDs. I mean, gosh, I'm sure you have a Blockbuster.
I'm on top of that. Yeah, I'm playing like Xbox a lot with my boy, or playing poker. So, one of the two.
Yeah.
That's how I spend my
free time.
You don't
have time for TV shows or movies.
I do. And you know, I love watching films. I haven't watched Transformers yet. Have you?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
But to tell you the truth, I wasn't a big Transformers kid.
Mm.
And I feel really bad because from watching the preview of the Transformers stuff, it just doesn't look like Transformers. It's just, you know, like from what I what I remember. I know what I remember was a cartoon, but the movie, it just doesn't have the same feel. It feels like a bunch of people having to deal with these robots that have nothing to do with Transformers.
Yeah, I know. I think over time that, like, you know, those storylines changed because I think Transformers were made, like, late 80s. I was a big Transformers fan. And,
were you?
Yeah, to make a, you know, sort of like a live action, I think the storyline has to change. I was talking to my buddy last night over poker, funny enough, and he was telling me, like, you know, like, some of the main characters are there, like, as far as, like, you know, robots that are involved, but, characters like Sound.
But they weren't talking, where they didn't talk.
You know, I haven't seen the film, so I got to check it out before I can make, you know, any judgment on that. But I hear it's really good, and I'm looking forward to watching it. I'm looking forward to watching Harry Potter, even though I was giving shit earlier about, you know.
Like Harry Potter?
Yeah, well, I enjoy that. I read the first 5 books. I haven't read, like, the 6th or 7th, you know. I guess I hear, like, 6th book, Dumbledore Dies, and, you know.
Wait a minute, 6th book, Dumbledore Dies?
Yeah, I'm starting to break that to you, buddy.
But no, I'm just saying, like, because, you know, I was a, I started watching the movies. I don't really read the books because the first book didn't really get me at all.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just, you know, I was more of, like, you ever read, the Darker Rising series? You ever?
No. Is that, like, a graphic novel?
No. It started with the Darker Rising. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it should have started with Undersea Overstone or something like that.
Okay.
But anyway, They did this whole series of this series called The Dark is Rising. My sister got me into it. My dad used to read it to me as a kid, and I liked it, but I started rereading it.
Uh-huh.
And really, it's one of those things you have to be read to as a kid because you really can't get into.
Okay.
Older, you know?
Right.
But it is a good series. It's just, you know, when you're older, you start losing, it starts losing its magic.
Yeah, no,
a lot
I
of these, but apparently Harry Potter doesn't.
Well, I think, like, in Harry Potter's case, because it's, like, you know, still fairly new as far as, like, J.K. Rowling just, you know, wrote it not too long ago. That's a wonderful story. Like, here's a person that was, like, you know, again, scraping the bottom of the barrel and trying to take care of her kid, and
I heard that, but I also heard so many rumors. I heard one rumor that J.K. Rowling was apparently, like, homeless.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's a pretty accurate.
She didn't have kids. She was just homeless. She was a homeless woman that apparently wrote everything on, like, scraps of paper. The whole Harry Potter series. On scraps
of those rumors
paper.
Are true. That's great. I almost said the F word. That's great. I mean, she obviously loves what she does, and she's really passionate about it, and that's one of those stories that's just very inspirational because, like, again, you know, what better success story than someone, you know, living on the streets and has nothing to her name and becomes, like, you know, I wouldn't say overnight success, but, you know, it's definitely taken off, and, you know, they're great stories, and it got kids really excited about reading again, you know. I can't remember a time where I was really excited about reading. You know, my affection for reading came much later. I really appreciate, like, when I have the time, just, like, sit down and read a good novel or something. One of my favorite stories is The Three Musketeers by Alexandre Dumas. And I think what makes me gravitate toward that story is just the camaraderie that he has, D'Artagnan, like the main protagonist, has with, you know, his fellow musketeers, and they go on all these adventures, but, you know, no matter what, friendship is, like, in the forefront, and, you know, you would live with your friends, and you die by your friends, you know, you have each other's back, so, yeah, that sort of thing.
That was something that you were always into, like, I mean, did you have, like, a posse that you...
I wouldn't say entourage. There's just, like, you know, my friends, you know, I hang out with, and I play a lot of poker with, and, you know, my, like I said, like I mentioned earlier, my buddy Gary, you know, we've traveled a lot together, and we've gotten some pretty hairy situations together, but, you know, we always have, you know, have each other's back, and, you know, there's nothing we wouldn't do for one another. I love that, you know, because sometimes, you know, in life, you just... you're unsure of certain things, and it's good to have, you know, someone in your life, like, you know, that no matter what you do, you won't be judged, and will always support you no matter what. And he's definitely been one of those guys, you know. My other buddy, like Matt Godek, who I went to UCLA with, tremendous talent. You know, we've definitely had our differences, but we were able to, like, work through those differences and become, like, really good friends. And I think that's really important because, you know, I mean, I don't know, it's just, you know, it's bad enough when you have your own self-doubts. It's like, I've gone through it before, like, you know, do I really want to continue, you know, acting, you know, like, mm-hmm. have these questions as far as, like, you know, when's my next gig, am I going to be able to pay the bills or whatnot, but, you know, it's always good to, like, you know, have your friends and you can bounce each other, you know,
have
bounce
back,
ideas
you
and
know?
Stuff. Exactly, you know, so... I'm really thankful for that, and I couldn't be happier. Yeah, I mean, it's been tough.
Life's not easy. You know, life's tough.
Exactly, you know, and, you know, those friendships mean a lot to me. So, like, you know, obviously there have been tough times, and, you know, you have your friends that'll pick you up and say, hey, you know what, it's just a passing thing, and, you know, you're going to get back on your feet, and vice versa, you know. You know, you have these friendships where there's no question in my mind, like, you know, whether or not they're going to be there for me, because they'll always be there for me. And, that's what I'm, like, most thankful for. So, yeah, man, I'm sure you have friends like that. You have your own,
right?
You know,
I mean, there are people that, you know, are going to be there no matter what, like,
right.
Unfortunately, one of my best friends isn't a big fan of LA, so.
He's not a big fan of LA. Yeah, you know, I think your friend probably shares that opinion with a lot of people.
In LA?
I was born and raised in LA, so, you know, I have to love it. I do. There was a point where I didn't want to live in LA, but, you know, if I had my choice, I'd probably live, you know, in San Francisco. I think that's just more of a city. But, yeah, you know, LA can be... The thing about Los Angeles is that, you know, I think a lot of people aren't from Los Angeles, so they come here with, like, you know, preconceived notions of what LA should be and how you should act accordingly, and you know, that's just not the case. There are a lot of wonderful people in Los Angeles. It's just a matter of, like, you know, you have the time to meet and find them and establish some sort of, like, you know, good, sincere relationship with. Because it seems like it's such a weird thing. Like, one of the things that used to really annoy the hell out of me is that, you know, I knew these people back in high school or back in, you know, grade school or whatever. And I, you know, honestly, I hadn't talked to them in, like, years, probably over a decade. And whatever little success that came my way, they saw some, like, film I worked on. Be like, hey, Paul, how's it going? Is it, for some weird way, they find me and, you know, they end up contacting me.
From MySpace.
Like, you know, MySpace or, you know, whatever, through my agent or whatever. And, like, I haven't talked to him in, like, you know, a decade or more, and they'll be like, hey, you know, I saw such and such project, whatever you worked on, and you think you can help me out? I'm like, dude, you know, I haven't talked to you in over 10 years. How you been? You know, at least start off with that, you know. And yeah,
I should have been like, dude, it's been a while, but I think I need to work myself out first.
Yeah, exactly. And I think and that's exactly the point. It's just like, you know, as far as, like, what I've done with my career. Which is really not that much. I've been really lucky, very fortunate, and, you know, whatever I've done to, you know, come to this point, like, I've done, and doesn't necessarily, you know, equate to, like, success for somebody else, or even if I, like, let's say, you know, recommend this person to, you know, my reps, it's not, you know, it's not going to equate as the same amount of success or more, and that's the thing, I think, I mean, to really be in this business, it's nice when you network and you have friends that help you out and stuff like that, but at the same time, it's like, you know, if you're not going to do the work yourself, then chances are you're not going to do well.
You're not going to succeed.
You know, I'm sure there's like, you know, one in, geez, I don't know, a million that, you know, are very lucky and very fortunate. They become like overnight successes, but for most of the actors here or across the country or all over the world, they really have to work at it. I mean, you look at people like Bryan Cranston or Sam Elliott, those careers didn't start well until, like, you know, their 40s. And, you know,
I want to say even George Clooney.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
I mean, perfect example. George Clooney, his aunt is, was it Mary Clooney? She did a lot of films with, like, Danny Kaye, Bing Crosby back in the day. And,
but he didn't actually get famous until he did ER.
Right, exactly.
Like, ER was his thing. And then after that, all of a sudden, he was like, whoa, this is the guy that's going to move up. I mean.
Right. And he was acting a long time, even before ER. And, you know, he had, like, a kind of recurring role on the Roseanne Barr show.
Or even, you know, you want to go even way more back, but Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't actually start really, like, wasn't he in, like, Taxi? But
yeah.
Like,
yep.
that was his show that he started when he was in his, like, 40s.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean,
you're absolutely right.
And then he actually didn't get famous until he did, really famous until he did, Back to the Future. So,
right.
I mean.
And he's amazing in those films. And, you know, like, as far as people I look up to, like, those are the people that, you know, have had longevity in their careers and whenever their careers
right.
have started. And I ultimately think the reason behind that, like, I look at Robin, and you know, he's his career spanned over probably, like, you know, 3 decades or so. Generally, the
he
guy
with
is
Mark and Mindy. I mean, so
yeah, Mark and Mindy. But, like, even before that, like, you know, I don't know if you know this, like
stand up, right?
Yeah, well, stand up, but, like, I think that stand up kind of spawned out of you know, he got accepted to Juilliard, which is, like, you know difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, one of the most, like, prestigious acting schools or art schools in the country. And, you know, it's a class that includes, you know, Christopher Reeve. That's how they became great friends. But, you know, he just loved improvisation. And I think, if I remember correctly, he, you know, only went to Juilliard for, like, a year and then, like, really explored improvisation doing stand-up. But he is a wonderful actor. I think a lot of people just, you know, see the stand-up comic in him. But he is an amazing actor. I mean, look at Good Will Hunting, or look at Good Morning Vietnam, or even one of my favorite films is Moscow and the Hudson. He just, you know, wonderful performance. And, you know, the reason why I think, one of the reasons why he's so successful, you know, obviously aside from his, you know, talent and he just entertains so many people, is just that he's generally a, you know, down-to-earth, great guy. People love working with him. And,
did you love working with him?
I loved working with him because, you know, obviously aside from the fact that he's, like, extremely witty and talented and funny, but just, you know, you have a conversation with him. Like, I remember, like,
but he's also a really good actor, period.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I remember growing up and watching his films and, you know, a lot of that, like, when I was a kid, I watched a lot of Bob Hope films, Bing Crosby, Marx Brothers, Jerry Lewis, Dean Martin, all those guys. And, you know, like, today, I think, you know, Robin definitely kind of, you know, is one of those guys that's, like, a combination of all those other guys that I just, you know, mentioned. He's like Danny Kaye and Harpo Marx put together, and just a wonderful guy to work with, really down to earth. And one of my favorite moments working with him was just, you know, we had a lot of time, downtime, like, in between takes, and we're just talking. The guy is probably one of the smartest people in the world. We were talking about science. He was telling me, just breaking it down for me, as far as, like, genome and stem cell and just science in general. And I'm just, like, standing there, like, you know, in awe, listening to his conversation about, you know, his fascination towards the science. And he also played this character named I forget what the character's name is. It's the film Awakenings, where he pretty much does a, you know, he's like takes on this like well-known clinical neurologist named Oliver Sacks, who wrote like, you know, he's just amazing books about like his experience with people with like neurological disorders, and he nailed it. And he was telling me about his experience and his friendship with Dr. Oliver Sacks. So it was just really fascinating conversation, and really most like one of the most down-to-earth people you ever meet. I think well-respected. Working on one-hour photo, we put in a lot of hours because, you know, some days, you know, on average day you work like 10 hours on a film set, but we were working, you know, pushing 16, 17 hours. And, you know, I remember one night it was just like, wow, we're going into our 17th hour. And, you know, he just bought pizza for everybody. Everybody was tired, but, you know, really we're excited about working on this project. And really great guy. Just, you know, picked up the bill for it. And he's like, he knew everybody was tired, and, you know, had his, like, you know, assistant to call in, like, you know, the local pizza place, and just made sure everybody was well fed and taken care of. And, you know, that's a class act right there. So, yeah, I find myself very fortunate, you know, having worked with him.
Did you ever mention him working on the movie Jack?
No. We talked about, like, I think we talked about, like, you know, his relationship and friendship with Billy Crystal, because, you know, I knew that, you know, they're really good friends, and
especially through the comedy circuit.
Comic Relief, yeah, absolutely. You know, they do good things, man. And I think that's the thing too. So, like, you know, these are people that really care about, you know, what they do, and also not just what they do, but other issues involved. And it was, like I said, it's just a great joy to be, you know, find myself on the set working with him, and, you know, Gary Cole, like, you know, there was a moment where we were talking about, like, his beginnings and how him and Laurie Metcalf and, you know, Gary Sinise all started, like, Steppenwolf Theater out in Chicago, and, you know, he was telling me about his experience and then coming out here and, you know, doing as well as he has been doing. He's awesome, you know, and, like, for them to just, I don't know, I mean, like I said, I don't have much, you know, a lot of credits on my resume, but, like, for me to, like, you know, be sitting next to a lot of these people and them imparting to me, like, you know, their experience and their wisdom, it's just, you know, take the time out to do that. It's just, it meant a lot to me, and I will always be thankful for that.
I mean, you were in this movie with them, and so you can gain all this knowledge, and you took that opportunity to do that, you know?
Yeah, that's the exciting part about it, you know? It's like, I mean, one, like, I mean, God honest truth, I was really nervous to be working with Rob, and it wasn't until probably like the third week that I finally got comfortable. But, you know, people that have had so much experience that I looked up to, you know, as I was like just still pursuing or learning about the craft and training, I never had imagined that I would, you know, be working with these guys, and I did, and I'm so thankful for that. And I'm really thankful to Mark, who wrote and directed the film, because, you know, I remember it was, you know, one of the few big scenes that I have with Rob, and, you know, Mark coming up to me to see how I was doing, and we were just talking. The greatest thing, like, the nicest thing he ever said to me was, like, you know, we auditioned a lot of people for your role, and we auditioned hundreds and hundreds of people, and you were the only one. And I was just like, wow, you know, I mean, like, most of the things that I've done, like, I get, like, very limited comment, like, you know, like, time with directors and, you know, get to talk to them and hang out with them. And Mark's always been really available to me and, you know, impart his wisdom and his experience. And, you know, the simple thing is just, like, you know, we keep in contact still to this day. But, like, you know, to have that moment and to be essentially, like, working with my favorite actor, and just before that moment telling me, like, you know, like, how happy he was to have me on board on the project. I was blown away. And, you know, it's a feeling that I'll never
forget. Mark had, I'm just looking at IMDb real quick, and I just realized that he did one of my favorite Weezer videos, El Scorcho.
Yeah, he's done a lot, man. Like,
that's how he got started, I guess, you know, doing Madonna and Michael Jackson and other stuff. He did, like, Scream for Michael Jackson, and
yeah, he's been around, man, and, you know, essentially, like, I think originally one-hour photo was supposed to be an idea, a concept idea for one of Beck's videos, but for whatever reason, it didn't go through, and he just loved the idea so much that he expanded to a screenplay, and, you know, he had two people in mind. I think it was, like, Tom Hanks and Robin, and I think Mr. Hanks had, like, you know, maybe some, like, scheduling conflict, so he had met with Robin, and Robin loved the idea and jumped on board.
I think either one of them would have been perfect.
Absolutely.
I'm glad Robin did it, because it just shows he's still a good drama actor.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these comedians, I will never see Dane Cook as a drama person.
Right.
But I'll
right.
always see, you know, Robin Williams is fantastic. Jim Carrey is fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys can expand into drama, but somebody like Dane Cook will always be comedic to me. I don't ever see him doing anything different.
I think for the longest time, I think, quite honestly, it's not because I'm biased or anything, and, you know, like I said, like, I love Robin, but, you know, he could have definitely won prior to having worked on Good Will Hunting, like, you know, on films like, you know, Good
Poet Society.
Exactly. And I think what you mentioned earlier is that some people just can't see certain people doing other things, and obviously Robin can definitely do, you know, other things than just comedy, and he does it very well. And to me, like, Robin's always been, first and foremost, a great actor. Whether it's just the comedy that he's done, like, you know, Mrs. Doubtfire or whatever. He's a tremendous, tremendous actor, very professional, wonderful, wonderful guy. I remember coming home one day, totally out of the blue, and it's like, you know, we're done with production, and I remember seeing a package, and that time, like, I wasn't receiving a lot of packages out my front door, and I opened it up, I'm like, wow, what is this? And, you know, it's a hardbound copy of the script, of 1 hour photo, and he has, like, he wrote a nice little inscription, and it just totally made my day, and just like, you know, this is how generous and how wonderful and how supportive this guy is.
He did? Like, he was the one who sent the script to you?
Yeah, well, like, you know, we all have our, like, you know, like, you know, scripts bound by Chaz, but, like, I think after, you know, production was done, like, you know, about maybe a few months afterwards, you know, I showed up one day to my home, and I saw a package on my front step, and I was like, what the hell, you know, and I opened it up, and, you know, it's a picture of Rob, and he wrote, like, a really nice, like, inscription. It's like, you know, thanks for all your dedication, and this is a guy that, you know, just thinks about everybody, and, it's nice, because, you know, I think it's definitely something that, you know,
sticks with your mind, you know, like,
yeah.
It makes you like this guy even more, and try to, like you're doing right now, you're promoting him. So.
Yeah, you know, and the guy, dude, seriously, like, I mean, I wish I could tell you so much more about the guy, but, like, you know, based off of my experience, but, like, I don't know, man, it's just a real genuine guy. He always makes time for everybody, and, you know, I think those are the people that I think continue to succeed and people want to work with, you know, and there have been some people that, like, and, you know, I don't really care to ever work with again, only because it's just, you know, kind of difficult to work with.
And you'll never talk about them, because...
Exactly.
Exactly,
because it's just not worth my time. And
yeah.
But I will definitely talk about the people that have been a complete joy to work with.
And that's all that really matters, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
like, the people that actually help you to get to succeed. You know,
learn, you know, how to, like, act accordingly, and, you know, I think it helped that, like, you know, my parents worked really hard when they immigrated to this country just to provide, you know,
mm-hmm.
for me and my sister, and I've always worked, like, with, like, this, like, blue-collar mentality, and, you know, on top of that, to, like, see people that I've always looked up to have that sort of same mentality and really appreciate the people that they're working with. That's really important. And, you know, that's what makes it such a joy to work with Werman Patrick and everybody else that I've worked with on the Dorm Days films. They're, you know, and some of them, you know, unfortunately, like, I don't keep in touch with everybody, but, you know, I do keep in touch with some of them, and it's a great joy to, like, keep in touch with, you know, Chris Owen, who unfortunately wasn't on part three, we still keep in touch. I haven't talked to him in a while, but he's definitely one of those guys that, like, I enjoy hanging out with and keeping in touch with.
What was the deal with that? Did they just because I've understood with Danielle, she just, not that she just got bored with it, just got kind of, like, she just got tired of doing all these movies back to back, I think.
Yeah, I think in Danielle's situation, she just wanted to take a little break and, you know, kind of explore. Like, she had just purchased a house and pretty serious in a relationship, and she just wanted to take a step back. I'm not too sure on, like, the specifics on that, but,
which was kind of, like, kind of sad when I heard that she wasn't in Dorm Days 3, but then I heard Worm and Patrick mention that it's okay because there's more people in Dorm Days 3 to make it up, you know, like, there's more of the cool people. That,
like I mentioned, Natalie and Nicole Garza, you know, watch out for those two because, you know, not only are they, like, very talented, but, you know, they're just a complete joy to be working with. And, you know, I had mentioned earlier, like, you know, working in Romania was just an overall great experience. But there was one time, like, I have to bring this up because there was one time where I definitely felt like being presented in a zoo because, you know, there aren't many Asian people in Romania. And, you know, most of the people that I had encountered or confronted in Romania, like, they were really excited, not just because, like, I was working on a film in their country, but, you know, they just don't get a lot of other people visiting their country, I guess.
Right.
But there was one time we were all, like, partying at a club, and I definitely felt that, like, people staring at me, you know, who's this guy, you know, he's, obviously he's not from here, but Natalie, she, you know, stood by my side, she knew what was going on, she held my hand and, you know, really stuck up for me. She's like, you know what, who cares? You know, you're not here for them, and you know, you're here working, and I'm going to be right here by your side, and, you know, if they're going to look, let them look, you know? And I was like, cool. I was like, you know, totally respected, you know, Natalie and Nicole, because, you know, we partied a lot together. You know, they acted as if, like, you know, there's no big bang, and, you know, I really appreciated that.
They sound cool. Looking at their resume, wow. They've been a lot of stuff together.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I think last time I caught them, they were on, that show, How I Met Your Mother with,
How I Met Your Mother. They did an episode, The Scorpion and the Toad, something like that.
They're great. They're just a joy to be around in general, whether it's on the set or, you know, off the set and having a good time. And, you know, Hearts of Gold, both of them. I miss them. I haven't talked to them in a while. They were supposed to come over for Christmas, but I got sick and, you know, had to cancel, like, dinner plans with them. But I hope they're both doing really well, and I'm sure I'll see them in the near future. You should have them, and you should have Jennifer Lyons come on the show because, you know.
I would love to have her. I don't know how to contact her.
I'll get you in touch with them. I'll send you an email.
Like,
yeah.
Actually, you know what? I had an interview with with Gary Jones, who was a director who did Spiders and Crocodile 2 Death Swamp. And,
oh, right on.
He also worked with James DeBello.
Okay, yeah,
and
Jimmy.
He had mentioned James, and I said, oh, yeah, I know him from the Dorm Days movies. One of my friends and I had mentioned that, you know.
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, he was great to work with, blah, blah, blah. I was like,
yeah,
you know, I'd love to have him on my show. Like, just kind of mentioning it, like, throwing it out there, and he goes, yeah, I'll get in contact with him. I'd love to have him. I mean, was he in Dorm Days 3? Please tell me.
He was in Dorm Days 3, and he's hilarious as, you know, Jimmy can be. You know, with Jimmy's, like, you know,
randomly coming up with new jobs and new ways to stay with the group, right? Like,
absolutely.
Even though he doesn't belong. And I just thought that was the funniest thing, to see him just as a random bartender. Pete's just like, what? Like,
well,
you're here still? Like, whoa.
What
like,
he does or has to do in part 3 is so
I'm
much more
pirate.
Fun than part 2. And, you know, sometimes, like, when you're hanging out with Jimmy, it's like...
Wait, is he a ninja in part 3? Please tell me.
No.
Oh, that would be
I will
great.
Tell you this. Somehow, you know, through the wacky minds of Worm and Patrick, he becomes a vampire slayer.
That is awesome.
Yeah, and he gets into some pretty, like, you know, funny situations. And, in fact, as far as his character goes, Cliff, he, you know, he haphazardly becomes a vampire slayer just so he can meet chicks, you know. So,
oh,
you know.
That Jimmy DeBello.
Yeah. lot of fun to work with because, you know, you never know what gym you're going to get each day, and he always keeps you on your toes and that sort of thing. But, yeah, you know, I didn't know him very well on the first film, and our scenes are very limited. I think we have, like, one scene, but as the storyline continues and grows, like, you know, we definitely have, like, more scenes together. So it was a lot of fun working with Jimmy.
Did you listen to the Cabin Fever commentary?
No, I finally caught Cabin Fever on cable.
Oh, man, but guess what? You would love this, but apparently there were some really funny things. I was listening to the Ryder Strong commentary.
Yeah.
But he was talking to Eli Roth about, you know, and what happened was, you know, Ryder decided, you know, to act out his character and to improv a little bit. But there's this one part where Jimmy's character was supposed to be kind of like this jerk, you know, or whatever, right? He was just
right.
Like, it was when they were all deciding that they all had to, you know, had to figure out what was going on. And
yeah.
Jimmy was acting up, right?
Uh-huh.
And Paul, the character that Ryder played, just looks over and just yells at James.
Yeah.
Just like yells at him completely. And the look that he gives on camera is actually a look that Jimmy was thinking to himself, like, it was real. Like, he thought that Ryder was, that the cameras weren't actually rolling.
Yeah.
That he was actually yelling at him. And he goes, well, you know, he, like, gives a look, like, oh, my God, you know, I can't believe you're yelling at me. And then he talked to him later, goes, dude, you're not really mad at me, are you?
That sounds so much like Jimmy, man.
Like,
it's serious.
He's a character that he doesn't realize later on that, like, you know, like, what's real and what's not, because, you know.
Got caught up in the moment, you know.
Yeah,
that's so Jimmy to a T.
Yeah,
you know?
That he's so Cliff, right? Like, when he's there, he's Cliff. And
well, I think Jimmy is just like, you know, Jimmy says a lot of stuff, and he's kind of oblivious to how, like, people will take it until they actually say, hey, Jimmy, that's not cool, or Jimmy, that's funny, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, that's Jimmy to a T. I can tell you stories, but, you know, they're a lot of fun stories.
Gosh, you got to buy Cabin Fever at least, or at least rent it, because
the commentary.
If you listen to the commentaries, there's so many stuff about James just as a person, period, that is just fantastic. I love listening to it. I listen to it over and over because I just love hearing about all these people because they're, I mean, I think that Eli, even though he made a great movie, but he had an excellent cast with it, you know?
Yeah.
And people that are going to be doing stuff like Joey Kern.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You haven't actually got a chance to work with him yet, have you?
No.
But Joey, I want to work with that. I've interviewed Steve Lemmy from Broken Lizard.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and he told me so many things about Joey, you know, like so many cool things about him, just being this really nice guy that's, you know, really, you know, like he's also another character actor. You know, he gets into the character and he becomes that character. And then all of a sudden people want to cast him as another stoner or something.
Right.
Like from the Super Troopers.
Right.
Or he does Cabin Fever where he's completely different. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, I want to cast him as this. But wait, you know.
I think that's the thing. It's like a lot of people sometimes don't have a lot of time to, you know, figure out other people on when they're filming. And, you know, in Jimmy's situation, it's like, you know,
play different roles.
Exactly. And if you met him, you wouldn't know, like, if you just met him, like, you wouldn't know what to make of him.
Because he's himself when you meet him, but when he
exactly.
makes his movies, he's the character, like, I remember him in, was it 100 Girls?
Yeah, I haven't seen that film.
Oh, goodness gracious. I mean, you've seen Cabin Fever, so you saw at least one other Jimmy DeBello. How many Jimmy DeBello films have you seen other than the Dorm Days?
Detroit Rock City. It's funny because, like, there's a funny story behind Detroit Rock City. Like, I think it was, like, one of the first films that he had auditioned for. And he was fairly young, and he was telling me how he went to the audition, and he'd just gotten the sides, the portion of the script that his character, or the character he was auditioning for, and he kind of read it monotone, like, you know, just like, you know, trying to get through the audition. And after the audition, he was like, all right, that's it. Did I get it? He was like all pumped. And it wasn't so much that, you know, his audition, it wasn't his audition that really got him cast. It was just like the exuberance he felt after getting through the audition.
Really?
It was like,
hey, did I get it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, he was just like, yay, yeah, so how was that? Did I get it? He was like really excited. And
he was himself.
Exactly. And got cast in Detroit Rock City. One of the funniest stories I can tell you.
Well,
about.
That's also funny that Giuseppe Andrews was in that, you know, Giuseppe Andrews, who played the main lead, Lex, in Detroit Rock City, or
yeah.
one of the many leads, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, you know, James was in that and whatever. He also was in Cabin Fever. So.
Yeah. You know, so, it's a small world. Like, you know, hopefully I'll be able to continue to work with a lot of the people that I've worked with in the past, because, you know, I surely miss them, and those that I don't keep in touch with, obviously, and would love to, you know, work with them again. Love to work with Jennifer. She's a sweetheart to work with, and
Jennifer,
all those guys. Yeah, she is one of the like coolest people you ever meet. She's real down to earth, and you know, whatever the Hillenbrands ask her to do, she's down for it. You know, all to make you know a funny or a good film. You know, she's
I was just surprised a lot of the people from Dorm Days weren't in Gamebox 1.0. Like, they didn't. Like, look for...
Yeah, I don't know if, like, it fit in the storyline. Like, Patrick, you know, was in Game Box. And, you know, it's actually a pretty good film.
Patrick,
I saw a screening.
Patrick Renna was also in it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's funny about... You mentioned Game Box, and you mentioned all the Dorm Days films, and you mentioned, like, you know, the past things that the Hillenbrands have done. You definitely see an evolution in their work, and it's really exciting to see that. And they're you know, a couple guys I love working with, because, you know, I think they have a lot of trust in their cast members, and to be directors and putting a film together, you really have to have that trust and let the actors kind of do their thing.
You've seen Game Box, right?
Yeah, I got to see it at the Arclight here in Hollywood a few years back. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, at that time, I think it was a little bit different probably, right, than what it actually...
You know, I haven't seen the DVD release, but
yeah.
I remember it was pretty good. I love the concept of it.
Well, I mean, I heard a lot of the special effects were changed and a lot of the stuff were fixed up to make it look... Because, like, Worm and Patrick were a little bit depressed about the look of the movie.
Oh, really?
The way, you know, the original look of the movie, like, 2 years ago, whatever, the one that you saw,
uh-huh.
I think they were a little bit... depressed because they thought it really looked cheesy and kind of, you know, hokey. I mean, I guess that's what it really was trying to be, but I think the actual look of the movie, you know, having... See, the thing is, when I interviewed them, I hadn't seen the movie because it hadn't been released. You know, it wasn't released till May, and I interviewed them, I think, in March, and then they didn't even... Or March or April, and they didn't even know that there was an actual release for it at that time.
Yeah.
Like, the Hillenbrands aren't really good.
Well, I don't know. I mean, like, I just remember
writers and letting them know.
I'm not too sure about that aspect, but I just remember, you know, what I saw. It had a lot of potential, and I remember talking to Patrick Cavanaugh about how, like, you know, there's a lot of green screen involved, and it was a lot of.
I thought that was really cool. I mean,
yeah.
Well, Robert Rodriguez did a whole movie green screen, so.
Yeah, you know, and it's like there's so much you can do, and. You know, it's good to see, like, you know, the guys that were involved with that film having so much fun with it, you know. I'm sure, like, you know, prior to that film, Kavanaugh didn't really do a lot of green screen. And, you know, he did a good job in that film. And, you know, as an audience member, I really enjoyed watching it and being there and supporting my friends, because I didn't know what to expect as far as how the film went. All I knew was, you know, my past experience with the Hillenbrands and the Dorm Days film, and I think Game Box came out before Part 2, and it's a totally different film, you know, and to see them do some of the things that they've done, which is, like, outside from the Dorm Days formula, you know, it's definitely a different film, and it was good to see, like, you know, all of them come together and make it, so.
I mean, especially that they could have asked anybody else to write, you know, Game Box, you know, or whatever, because they're like, oh, well, we got these guys who are going to write the Dorm Days movies. Let's do somebody else, you know, make somebody else write, you know, Game Box.
Yeah.
I mean, but they trusted Worm and Patrick, and they, you know.
And you know what? And that says a lot. You know, because they could have, like, you know, totally went a different direction with, like, the latter Dorm Days films with, you know, as far as casting goes.
Or even writing goes. They could have, like, you know, found other writers if they wanted to. They just knew that these writers were good enough to, or and these actors were, you know, just like they knew you were gonna be, you know, still in the second one. Even though I do want to mention that your character in Dorm Days 2 was a little bit different. It seemed a little bit different than
the first one. Absolutely.
Like you were in Dorm Days 1, you seemed to be in and out, you know, like coming in and out.
There's a huge transformation between 1 and 2 because, you know, it's funny because, you know, like when we did Dorm Days 1, I think there was a lot of uncertainty as far as, like, you know, certain characters. And I remember auditioning for Dorm Days 1. It was a totally different character than the one that's, like, translated on screen.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dorm Days 2 came and, you know, okay, well, Wang is now part of the storyline with Pete. And they have their own thing going on, which is totally different from, you know, part one. But I think the good thing is that, like, you know, there is an evolution, and they wanted to see Wang and Pete do, you know, different things.
Well, I will say that if you think about it, though, that in Dorm Days 1, Pete and Wang were like good friends, you know?
Yeah.
They, you know, you could tell. And then all of a sudden, you know, Dorm Days 2, all of a sudden you can see that develop a little bit more, you know? Absolutely.
I think, you know, it's funny. Like, I think it's kind of synonymous with, like, college life, you know? I mean, not to, like, you know, make comparisons to, you know, Dorm Days 1 and then experience and, you know, just entering college. I think college is sort of this thing where, you know, you go and there's, you know, meet people from all walks of life, and they're trying to figure out, you know, who they are and stuff like that. And I think you kind of see that in part two more than you do in part one, because, you know, Pete and Wang are kind of like secondary characters in the first movie, and
right.
You know, thanks to Patrick and Worm, they've kind of, you know, spent more time on those two characters and put them more in the forefront and more involved with the storyline. And, you know, like I said, I'm really excited about part three coming out because I'm hearing good things. I haven't seen it. There are, like, a handful of people that have seen it that I've spoken to, and they seem to have received it pretty well. And we'll see, like, what happens with that. But, you know, it was a joy to work on. And, you know, not just, like working on a set, but just hanging out with everybody when we weren't filming. You know, it's just you build these friendships. And, you know, regardless of not having talked to, like, you know, some of the people, you know, the friendship is still there, and I really appreciate that.
Right, and I guess, I mean, the cool thing about working, I guess, with Worm and Patrick is they looked at these characters, they saw you and Pete's character, Wang and Pete's character, as people that could have done more in the first one than they did. Like, both characters, I think, were very, very, you know, very small in their way, but they deserve to be more of the, you know, the lead characters, you know.
Oh, thanks, man. Yeah, I really appreciate that. And I really appreciate, like, you know, Worm and Patrick, you know, really kind of expanding those characters because, one, you know, I got to work, and two, you know, I really enjoyed, you know, how those characters evolved.
Were you at least a little bit worried when you were doing the first one, like going, oh, man, maybe I won't be, if there ever is a sequel, I probably won't be?
No, you know, because on the first one, I had, like, you know, it's funny because I just mentioned, like, working with these guys were a lot of fun. You know, like, you know, if that was ever a situation where, like, hey, you know, we're not going to continue the story, like, cool, you know, but I'm, like, thankful that we continued to, you know, continue this, you know, this friendship. But I'm glad how, because, you know, quite honestly, like, the first Dorm Days, like, I had such a secondary character, and I didn't really have that much to do with it, but I had a lot of fun doing it. At the same time, it's like, because they were secondary characters, I wasn't so, sure about the character and how it would be received. But doing the, you know, part two allowed me to, like, you know, explore that a little bit more and have fun with it. We had a lot of fun doing part two. I think part two we did on, you know, the Queen Mary here in Long Beach, or, like, you know, down in Long Beach, and we had a lot of fun working on the film, but by, like, you know, end of week three, we were all just tired of the boat and Long Beach altogether. A lot of funny stories, you know, when the camera wasn't rolling, and, you know, and I like how in part three, you know, things turned out, so as far as the story goes, because it was a lot of fun, and, you know, like I said, I got to have an intimate moment with Worm. It was really sweet.
Yes, that's really cool. Now, I want to mention the character, because I think all the characters kind of change in Dorm Days 2. Like, they're so different than what they were in Dorm Days 1 in a way. Like,
yeah.
Either they've grown up or they've really changed.
Yeah.
Especially,
I mean,
Foosball.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Okay.
Obviously, yeah, Foosball changed because he got recast by Justin
Whalen.
Was he in
Dorm Days 3 too?
No, unfortunately, that storyline didn't continue. I think.
Was there another character named Foosball, or?
No Foosball, unfortunately.
No Foosball in Dorm Days 3.
I know. I think you know, I'd mentioned, like, you know, it's still a pretty big cast, but, like, some of the people, like, some of the storylines, they want to compress a little bit.
Because there were a lot of them.
Yeah, exactly. But I also mentioned, like, you know, Oren, you know, does double duty, and so does Jennifer Lyons, and, you know, that storyline is pretty intricate, and it's really funny. It really adds to the comedy that all the shenanigans that happen, you know, while watching this film. But unfortunately, yeah, Foosball, and then Chris Owen, who plays Booker in part two and part one, his relationship, I forget the character's name, played by Gable, didn't continue, because I think they just wanted to compress the story a little bit and, you know, hopefully have, like, a better, like, you know, faster flow as far as, you know, comedy goes. But
yeah, Gable Carr, did she leave? She left the series after the second one?
You know, I think, you know, it's funny, like, I was in Romania, and, like, she had MySpace messaged me, and she's like, so did you get voted off the island? I'm like, no, I'm actually in Romania filming with everybody right now, and unfortunately, it's just one of those situations where that storyline just, they just didn't know how to put that in or fit that in the next Dorm Days.
So once Chris was gone.
Yeah, basically that pretty much killed that storyline.
Unless, I mean, I guess there's some stuff they could work in with her, but it would just be awkward.
Yeah, exactly. Like, gone. Where's Booker, you know, played by Chris Owen, so.
Chris Booker died by, you know, hey, guys were on the ocean. He fell off.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
I mean, he could have done anything, I'm sure, but, you know.
Gurn his frustration threw Gable Carr's character off the boat.
And, you know, the sad thing is, I've seen her on MySpace or whatever, right? She has her personal MySpace where she has her friends, you know, right?
Right.
And she seems really cool, but it seems like she's really trying so hard to become, like, this Hollywood actress, and unfortunately, I haven't really seen her do anything but the Dorm Days movies so far.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how to explain that. Like, you know,
she's been trying, though.
You know, there are people that are really good at that whole business aspect, and some people, I don't know, for whatever reason. I mean, it's, who knows, like, how people are going to be received. And, yeah, I think, you know, the good thing, aside from, you know, her acting pursuits, she's also, like, in a band that, you know, she sings in, and that's cool. But
do you go see her at all? Like,
you know, I haven't spoken to Gable in a long time. Like, we weren't that great of friends while filming, but, you know, it was cool, whatever, you know. But, yeah, I don't really know her that well. I think, you know. Yeah,
you're not enough to talk to her randomly. But.
Exactly. I mean, some of the stories that we did talk about were just kind of, like, off the wall. Like, I didn't even get them. I think I have a sense of humor, but at the same time, it's just like, that's, like, totally left field. So, but, you know, she's a nice person, and, you know, I wish her all the luck, and I hope she's doing well, and I hope she's, you know, finding fulfillment in her career, because it's really hard to do, you know?
Right, and just, I mean, I guess you being more of a veteran than she is, you know? Like, you've
been
out there. What?
You were saying, I couldn't hear you.
I said, you're more of a veteran than she is, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know, I mean, like, I don't know how long, like, Gable's been doing it, but.
You've had more work, I guess. Like,
you have
more of a resume than she has.
I've been really lucky
for 10 years that you've been working.
Yeah. I mean, I've been really lucky in that respect, but I think it's because, like, you know, some of the people that I worked with, I really just, you know, observed and, you know, hopefully kind of, like, in some way, like, you know, emulate and try to be professional. But, you know, sometimes, I don't know, it's just, you gotta, I don't know. I mean, yeah, if Gable's thing is to, you know, promote herself, but I hope that, you know, she does what's necessary to, like, back all that, like, you know, self.
I mean, she did a fantastic job in the Dorm Days movies. She was great.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that with those under her, you know, under her belt, she can go out and try to get more jobs in the comedy or film market.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's a lot of potential there, you know. And, you know, obviously the Helen Brands casted her for a reason because it, you know, fit the storyline, like, you know, part two and part one. And, you know, her character definitely grew from part one. You know, and she's really talented. You know, I've heard some of her songs, and they're pretty cool, you know. But unfortunately, I haven't, you know, she's one of the few people that I haven't kept in touch with, you know, since we've, you know, filmed part two.
Right.
You were going to say, like, who else are you going to bring on, man? Because, you know, you really should bring on Kavanaugh. I think you're talking to Kavanaugh right now.
Right, yeah. Gosh, you said Jennifer. You might talk to her.
Yeah, definitely. I'll definitely pass the word along to Jennifer and Jimmy and get in contact with you.
Yeah, I mean, dude, I'd love to have, like, a Dorm Days group, I mean, to come on here. Because, like, I mean, I had Worm and Patrick and... I saw you were talking to them, and I was just like, man, these guys are so talented. Like, everybody in Dorm Days. I mean, the Dorm Days, the first Dorm Days movie, I loved. I actually made my dad watch it. You know, my dad isn't normally the kind of guy who would, I mean, he likes, like, National Lampoon's usually. Like, he loves Animal House.
Yeah, I love
Animal House,
like,
the
too.
Newer National Lampoon stuff.
Right.
And he watched it because this was a comedy of errors, you know? Like, he was interested in seeing a comedy of errors.
Total fart.
And
yeah.
The thing he didn't like was what Worm and Patrick mentioned in their interview was the way that the Helen Brands made it out to be, like, an American Pie version.
Yeah. You know,
like
a whole marketing
had,
thing, you know?
Yeah, the whole thing, they made it out to become this, you know, American Pie kind of
gross-out
humor, and which they weren't, you know, which those guys aren't used to doing. They didn't do.
Or about, yeah, absolutely.
And then all of a sudden they did this one, and they're like, oh, that's what you wanted. Well, fine, I'll do Dorm Days too like that, you know?
Right.
But we didn't know this is what you wanted originally.
Yeah, it's kind of a trial, you know, trial by error sort of thing, but, like, I'm sure, like, the Helen Brands figured that out.
That's why it apparently did well enough to make a sequel of, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like, you know, American Pie, who Chris Owen was a part of, but it's just,
right.
You know, it's a different entity unto its own. It's a totally different, like, you know, story, and it's very successful, much more successful. But, you know, that's not to say that, like, I mean, and you know how hard it is to put out your films, and it's a
obviously.
Miracle when films get...
Oh, well, I mean, I love when Hollywood actors watch my films, so...
Yeah. Hey, man, you know what, dude? You obviously have a love and passion for it, and that's the most important.
Right. I mean, obviously, you try and you work, you know, and you do whatever, if it's TV or, you know, film or whatever, you know, you try to put it out there.
See, that's the thing, and despite, like, you know, a lot of what we do is, like, based off what how people are going to perceive it, and I think the most important thing, if you can remember, like, you know, anybody, like, listening, like, if you can remember this one important rule is that, like, yes, you know, that is an important thing, and that's, like, part of the business, but if you find fulfillment in what you do, no matter what it is, then that's all that's really important, and, you know, it might be kind of hypocritical of me saying, because, you know, I do these things and I get paid for it, but I really enjoy what I do. You know, even commercials. I love doing commercials because, you know, you tell a little story in like 30 seconds and that's not an easy thing to do. And, yeah, I get paid for it and it helps pay the bills, but at the same time I'm doing what I want to do. And I have to constantly remind myself, you know, what, you know, yeah, I would love to do films like, you know, art house films like 1 Hour Photo and make a career out of that, but you know that the reality is that, you know, I have to do these jobs to pay the bills, but I love those jobs too, you know.
Right.
You know, But and it's always hard to kind of remember, you know, hey, you're doing it, and you know, there are a lot of people that would love to be in your situation, and some for some weird reason, whether it's fear or whatever the frustration that they're facing in their lives or you know their creative lives, you know, they just don't do it, and that's the shame. It's like, you know, you succumb to this fear and to a point or, you know, a degree where you just don't want to try anymore. And I've been there, and, you know, the fact that you're doing it and you're doing it because, you know, you enjoy doing it, that should matter mostly. And sometimes it's hard to remember that, but, you know, I always appreciate the people that you know, are doing what makes them happy, you know.
Have you ever thought about, like, making your own movie, like, just...
You know, I love acting so much, and I feel like I still haven't, you know, fully grasped, like, everything that, you know, I'm constantly learning acting, and there's always something else I can learn and improve upon. As far as making films, like, I just don't see myself doing it because it's just, like, an all-encompassing job. I have so much respect for filmmakers because they have to oversee so much detail that goes into a film, whether it's, like I mentioned, like a 30-second, like, commercial or, you know, a short film or feature.
Or...
Exactly. It's so much. And, you know, call me lazy or just scared, but, yeah, that's just not really my passion, you know, but I definitely respect those that are able to do it.
Okay, I'm just surprised. I thought you might, like, wonder what you would do if you did your own movie, like, if you were to direct your own movie. What would you do a movie about?
I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, definitely stories that are close to home, you know, that I've experienced in my life, like, you know, whether it's, like, relationships with people or relationships with my parents and, you know, kind of transcend, like, past, like, you know, color boundaries and stuff like that. Maybe someday, you know, but I'm just not at that point or ready to you know, take on such a, you know, mammoth project like that. I think, you know, I have so much respect for my friends that are writers and filmmakers because there's so much detail involved. And for me, I'm not like a multitasker. So, you know, focusing on acting is perfect for me right now. I have some wonderful friends that do it all. Like I mentioned, my buddy Gary, who writes and produces, and now just like now.
And then do you act in his movies and stuff?
Yeah. You know, you should check his short films out. I think you really like it, you know, a lot, because, you know, it's pretty much like you guys have, you know, very, like, you know, similar sense and, you know, sense of humor. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, if you go to his MySpace page, he's like my fourth friend on my top friend list, and, you know, check out some of his shorts. They're pretty funny. They're pretty off the wall, but they're hilarious. And they're just, like, a joy to work on. And, you know, that's the thing. It's like, he's my friend. He's my buddy. And I think a lot of people in this business love to work with friends because, you know, they're reliable or, you know, you just have, like, a good connection with these people and, you know, have a lot of fun working with these people. So, you know.
So are you in most of these movies, though?
Most of them. Let's see. Like, I think he's got, like, three short films. And I think, yeah, I'm on all of them. They're a lot of fun. I don't think he has Planet of the Grapes up on his profile, but it's a pretty fun film. Oh, you know, if you're ever interested in watching that, I'm sure I can get you in touch with my buddy.
Yeah, I mean,
and he can send you a copy or something. Hey, can you ever come out to LA and hang out with us?
Dude, I've been invited to LA you don't know how many times. And oh man, if I had the chance and the opportunity, I'd be every day of the week I have a new person to hang out with at this point.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, if you ever need a place to crash, man, you're more than welcome.
Exactly. Thank you, because I've got that. That means that's another place I could crash another day. You know.
Yeah.
I could crash a place a day, I guess. You know, at this point.
Well, if you ever crash at mine or Worms or Patrick's, just, you know, make sure you can get, like, there's gonna be a lot of drinking involved, and, you know, we'll have a good time.
That sounds like most of my nights anyway.
But
no, yeah, I mean, that's crazy, but it's great.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to go to L.A. It's just Virginia right now is expensive enough.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Williamsburg is the most expensive place because it's a tourist town, you know.
Right.
Like, so everything is expensive, no matter what.
Overpriced.
Yeah. Yeah, overpriced and ridiculous. And because it's Colonial Williamsburg, so, you know, they got the tourists for Colonial Williamsburg stuff, and they got the people
right.
for Busch Gardens, and they got the people for Jamestown. We got way too many tourist place stuff.
Well, Will and I will probably have to, like, you know, I'll talk to Patrick, too, and we'll see if we can, you know, make a trip out to Virginia and hang out with you.
That would be great, dude. I mean, I know I was supposed to, like I said, I was supposed to do an amazing Schlock show with them because they're going up to Minnesota to...
one was telling me that. Like,
yeah, he's going up to Minnesota to visit family and friends and stuff and, you know, with Patrick. And I don't know exactly what they're doing, and I think it's top secret, but, you know. whatever they're doing, they're. I talked to them about doing an amazing Schlock show, which would be awesome. I would love to interview some of those guys because He Stops at Me is the movie that got me into Dorm Days. Like,
yeah, those guys have been, you know, they've known each other for a long time and prior to.
And you know what? I no offense to Hillenbrands, I think the Hillenbrands were great guys, but if Worm had directed, you know, Dorm Days, I think it would be a lot different. And you guys would have still been cast. Everybody would still have been, you know, if it had been the same cast, it still would have been awesome, but it would have been, you know, it would have been different.
I totally know it would have been different because they, you know, they, you
they've
know,
got a different sense of humor, and they got a different
absolutely.
Way of their thinking. And
but
and
at the same time, you know, at the same time, I'm really happy, if, you know.
That Dorm Days came out and that the Hillenbrands did it.
Yeah, because, you know, I mean, like, I was telling you earlier, like, you know, especially, like, after watching Gamebox, there is an evolution to, you know, their process and their work and what they want. But, like, at the same time, it's like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, some people really enjoyed watching Dorm Days 1, and, you know, some people have a different opinion of it. But, you know, if you look at all the films, you know, I mean, even before Dorm Days, there is a definite like evolution in their work and how they do things. And what I loved most about working with the Hillenbrands is that, you know, and most recently is like working on Dorm Days 3, and they kind of, you know, they definitely trusted us a lot more, and, you know, as a result, we had a lot more fun. I mean, we had fun doing all the films, but, you know, they definitely understand that it is, you know, a collaboration, and for that I'll be thankful, because, you know, there are times, like, you know, before a shot, like on the third film, you know, Scott and David would get together and be like, you know, like, if I had a scene coming up and we're shooting it, they're like, oh, what do you think about this? I'm like, yeah, you know, I totally, like, sometimes I would agree with them. I'm like, you know what about this? And they were totally open to that. And, you know, to have that and not just, like, you know, be at, like, you know, your director's mercy or, like, you know, their control. They were open to, you know, suggestions, and I really, really, really appreciated that, because it just, it made it a lot easier or it made it a lot enjoyable work experience, you know? So, and I think a lot of that comes from just, like, you know, Patrick and Worm, you know, allowing the Pete and Wang storyline to, you know, continue and grow. So, you know, I mean, it's something that happened, like, you know, Dorm Days 1 probably was filmed, like, 2002, so 5 years ago. And, you know, after having worked with, you know, the Hillenbrands on 3 films, you grow together rather than apart. And that's one of the experiences that I really appreciate.
So, wait, how old were you when you first started with the...
2002, 5 years ago, so I think I was, like, 27. I'm 32 now. Yeah.
So your MySpace is wrong?
No, MySpace for the character Wang is supposed to be about 22.
Oh.
So, yeah, I'm probably...
Oh,
like,
yeah, I thought that was supposed to be actually yours, just you were just saying Wang, you know.
No, the funny thing about the whole Wang profile is that I had been approached by... this guy, his name's Gregory Kaft, who works with the Hillenbrands, and he's all in charge of, like, all the characters, you know, MySpace profiles, and, mm-hmm. and I think most of them, with the exception of, like, me and another person, I can't remember who, have total control over those profiles. But, like, when Greg approached me, he's like, yeah, I have this great idea to, like, you know, create all these profiles for all the characters on MySpace. I'm like, you know, that's cool and all, but I'd love to have control over that. I mean, I'll do what I have to do as far as, you know, promote the film, but I kind of wanted to make it on my own, and plus I just had a lot of time on my hands, so I had a lot of fun with Wang's profile. Yeah, and I'm probably, like, one of the older, or if not, like, the oldest cast, as far as that, like, whole college group, yeah, so, yeah, that's...
You're the very real elder of the group.
Yeah, exactly, basically, but not as funny or good-looking, so... but, yeah, I have
you're
a lot
no
of fun.
Ryan Reynolds, but you're close.
You know, I met Ryan Reynolds. He's a great, funny guy. I can't, you know, again, one of those guys that, you know, I can't say enough good things about. Like, one of the first gigs that I ever did was a show called Two Guys Go on a Pizza Place, and eventually after a few years it became Two Guys and a Girl. But it was with, like, Trailer Howard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the owner of the pizza place is this guy named Julius. I forget his last name, but he played Show Nothing and The Last Dragon, Barry Gordy's Last Dragon. I don't know if you've ever seen that film, but it's a great film. It's about, like, this black kid in Harlem who thinks he's, like, the second coming of Bruce Lee, and it's just a great film. And Julius plays the antagonist named Shonuff. And, yeah, it was a great joy to, like, you know, meet him as well. But Ryan Reynolds, great guy. Really like what he does. Yeah.
I'm just looking at all the MySpace profiles for all the Duendes
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
Pete, also 22 years old. Go figure.
Yeah.
I think Patrick on there. You know, on his MySpace profile.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems like all the, I guess all the fake people, including I guess what was supposed to be yours, is up there like My Wang. Mike, Marla, Stukas.
Oh, really? Oh, cool. Yeah. Gregory Kraft, like I said, he's in charge of all these profiles, and he does a great job, and I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think he does a great job of, like, you know, corresponding with people that do write into all these, you know, fictitious characters. I think there are people on, you know...
That actually believe that these are real characters, like these
exactly.
are real people on my stage.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. Lynn, you're on here?
You know...
God, how was it... where's Marla right now?
Yeah, it's pretty hilarious. Like, I'll get, like, emails from people out in Amsterdam, and it's really cool. They're, like, really sweet people, but, yeah, I think they actually think Wang is a real person. So, but it's a lot of fun.
That's really cool.
What's that?
I said that's really cool.
Yeah, I know, and, you know, it's nice to see, like, you know, they're such small films, but they get a pretty good response. You know, most of the people that I encounter, you know, have seen it, and, you know, some of my friends joke around about it, but, you know, it usually gets a pretty good response, and I'm really happy about that. Yeah, man. Yeah, Wang is, what's that?
I think I had to go to my
cell phone real quick.
Okay, cool.
I'm telling you, my landline's been acting up, so...
That's weird.
Yeah, randomly I'll have to go to my cell phone and try to get... Like, it'll be better in a second, and my cell phone will suck in a second.
Yeah, usually, you know, a year or two ago, it was, like, the other way around. We'd have to go to our landline for a better connection, but, you know...
Well, I mean, it's, like, it's going to suck in a little bit when my actual, like, landline starts acting better. But for some reason, it keeps doing this randomly, like, where I'll be talking, I'll have to switch to my cell phone.
Yeah.
But, exactly, about the Dorm Days people, I think that, I mean, like, I love Jennifer Lyons in the movie. Were you good friends with Danielle Fishel? Like,
I wouldn't say good friends, but, like, you know, we really enjoyed working together, you know, because, like, I think... You know, there was like a small group of people that have all known each other because they were all, like, you know, child actors, and they knew each other from, you know, the various projects that they all worked on. But, you know, wonderful, wonderful girl. I haven't talked to Tony in a while. Tony, who plays Newmar, he's in London, I believe, acting out there. But it was great.
He was in Dorm Days 3, right?
Yeah, it was a great joy to work with him again, especially because, you know, we had established like a great friendship from the very beginning. He's just, you know, overall really nice guy and real easy to get to know. I played this horrible trick on him on part three, like, and you know, I laugh about it to this day. It's great. But one of the guys, the local actors there, his name is Claudio, and I was telling you about, like, you know, how in Romania they have, like, basically something that's like, you know, moonshine, but it's like a brandy to them, and just, you know, a lot of homes, like, you know, in their own homes, they distill it themselves. So after we're done shooting one day, Claudia comes up to me. He's like, I heard you really wanted to try, like, you know, the national alcohol of Romania. I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm totally into it. And he pulls out this water bottle, and it's like a clear liquid. It looks like vodka, basically, but, you know, it was in a water bottle. And unfortunately, you know, Tony came up at that moment. I'm like, hey, Tony, let's drink to our friendship. And, you know, Tony was totally oblivious. He takes the bottle from me with, you know, the stuff called Palinka, which is, I don't know, let's say 80 proof, so like 40% alcohol. Takes a big swig, thinking it's water. He swallows, and the look on his face, his eyes are tearing up, and he's just like, wow, that wasn't water. I'm like, I know, I thought you knew. So, yeah, that was one of the funnier moments that happened.
Gosh, if you had given him Everclear, man, that would have been hysterical.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because, you know, we all partied one time. I think Tony, unfortunately, horribly burned his hand. Like, they lit his shot on lit his shot of absinthe on fire, and as he took the drink back, like, some of the liquid came onto his, you know, fell onto his hand, and it was still lit. So there was like a, you know, for a while he was dancing around with like a flaming hand. But that's Tony, and you know, he put up with it, like, as a trooper, like the trooper he is, and, you know, just laughed about it. But, you know, he was in miserable pain the next couple of days because his hand was so burnt.
I'm going to ask you this. Were you good friends with Cameron Richardson?
Not so much, but, like, because, you know, she had only worked on the first one, but when we did hang out, she would tell me, like, the funniest stories that, you know, some stories I can't really, you know, say.
Really, really don't do, right?
Yeah.
They were funny, but not stuff you want to Sweet say.
Girl. Yeah, not the kind of stories I should probably divulge online.
I want to say that she's been doing really well for herself.
Yeah, she was on an episode of Entourage not too long ago.
She was actually in two.
Oh, okay.
She got a recurring role as, you know, like, what happened apparently is Vince, you know, did a little something with her, and then all of a sudden, you know, in a coat room.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, later on in another episode, he was like, you know, maybe I should invite this girl to go on vacation with, you know, the girl that I messed with in coat room, you know, and brought her back. So obviously she had, you know, did something where, you know, where she got herself a chance to have a call back for another, you know.
Yeah, you know, she's, I don't know, I mean, like, Cameron is one of the sweetest girls you'll ever meet.
And I just read that she's an Alvin in the Chipmunks movie.
Ah, nice. That's crazy.
Yes. So she's going to play Claire in that. I don't know how big of a role, but
yeah.
I guess they're doing live action animation movie.
Yeah, you know, her and I really gravitated towards her and Tatiana Ali. Unfortunately, she wasn't,
which,
know,
also were, wasn't also not in the and you know, you were in scene with both of them in the same time, I guess,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And that was pretty cool.
Well, the second film, like, it's funny because, like, I think Worm and Patrick really tried hard to get, you know, both Tatiana and Edwin Hodge, who's a wonderful actor as well, to, you know, but it was, like, one of those situations, like, you know, Chris and Gable's characters that, you know, they just didn't want to continue with that storyline and kind of compress it a little bit more. But, I still talk to Edwin. I haven't talked to Tatiana in a long time, but, you know, I hear she's doing well. Really sweet gal, love her to death. You know, she went to Harvard, of all places. Like, I think this was like after
Tatiana.
Yeah, she's hella smart. But she's one of those people that, like, that are so intelligent, they're not really arrogant about their level of intelligence, and I love that about her. You know.
Yeah, I'm surprised Edwin wasn't in it and in the sequel, because, I mean, I guess even if she wasn't there,
there was a lot of reasons for almost them to break up, and that, you know.
Well, now that I think about it in hindsight, I think, and Edwin's doing great, and Tatiana's doing great. Unfortunately, as far as part two goes, I think Tatiana, her conflict or schedule conflict was doing Glory Days with Josh Lucas and I think Derek Luke, and Edwin was off in Texas doing the Alamo. So, got to do those projects, and unfortunately they just, conflicted with the shooting schedule of part two.
I just think it's funny. I was just looking up IMDb, and I saw that Tatiana Ali, on IMDb, her actress, when after it says actress and it says what movie she's most known for, Storm Days.
Oh, nice! That's awesome!
That is crazy,
That's
though.
That's awesome.
That is crazy.
That's awesome, because, I loved watching her on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Right, exactly. I thought that would be her most popular thing, that they would think, to put her down as. That's where I knew her from. I was like, oh, my God, that's Ashley Banks. But,
yeah,
of course,
I think she's related to Muhammad Ali. I think she's, like, Muhammad Ali's niece or something like that. A little bit of trivia for you.
Really? Because...
Yeah.
I'm trying to look that up, but they don't really go into that too much.
Well, yeah, I think they're either from, I'm not sure.
Did she actually say that, or was that, maybe that was a joke.
I can't remember, but, I can definitely see, that connection. I met her folks, and they're really sweet. Her dad's a huge dude. Big guy, so,
I'm a big Will Smith fan. In fact, I'm really happy that he's doing I Am Legend.
I saw the trailer for that. It looks great.
Well, just the fact that he's out there still working and stuff, actually more serious than, Fresh Prince or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, doing stuff that, actually means something in this world, instead of just...
Yeah, you saw Pursuit of Happiness. That was a great
show. I actually didn't see that yet. I really want to, though. Was it really that good?
Yeah, it's one of those really heartfelt films that's based off, a true story, and I really liked it. I think it's just one of those things, it reminds me of my folks who work so hard just to, support me and my sister and the whole family, and it's definitely one of those, heartfelt stories where, a parent makes so many sacrifices just to, put food on the table for the kids, and he does a great job, and his son does a wonderful job as well.
Cool. Yeah, I'm anxious to see that. Let's see. And it's Will Smith's son. I was just wondering if Jada wasn't in it, was it? Was she?
No, I think it was Thandi Newton. I think she's known for, she did one of the, I think Mission Impossible 2. She also did the sequel to the Vin Diesel Pitch Black movie.
Triple X?
Chronicles of Riddick.
Chronicles of Riddick.
He plays the Lady Macbeth character in that film. But, Danny Newton, she plays the mom. I think Jada was probably busy doing the Matrix films at that point.
Is she still doing those? I stopped watching after the first Matrix.
What's that?
I stopped watching after the first Matrix. I didn't.
Yeah, she did. I think she did all three.
I really didn't like the first Matrix, so.
Oh, really?
I didn't watch the second or third because I really didn't care if Keanu Reeves' liver died at that. His character, Neo. I just wasn't into it. His character didn't do anything for me. I didn't care or whatever. And I think that was a lot of things. A lot of people loved that series, and loved that. That kind of stuff, so.
Right. They just, they want to see the story continue and see where it takes them. I enjoyed watching those films.
Really?
Yeah.
You're a big Matrix fan?
Well, I wouldn't say I'm a big Matrix fan, but I like what they did with them. And as far as, at that time and when they made them and the special effects, were pretty amazing to me, I think. It really, got me psyched, especially about, action films, too. So, I thought it was pretty nice to see, the whole, this whole, ideology about, you know, technology and the machines taking over. So it's kind of interesting. It's kind of like, you know, in relation to, like, you know, Terminator and all those films, just a different take on the story. So, yeah, you know, I'm a big fan of, you know, sci-fi films or action films. You know, I grew up watching a lot of those films. And, you know, what they do with films these days is pretty amazing. Like, I would have never thought, you know, if you'd asked me, like, 20 years ago, if I could ever imagine seeing a live-action Transformers movie, what they're doing with, like, you know, CGI, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of the technology is getting so advanced that you can't even tell, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
pretty soon you
that...
won't even need actors, you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's pretty scary. I hope that never, you know, never happens because I'm out of a job. But
I'm thinking that's what the directors are thinking these days, you know. Like, wow, we don't need it. Everybody has to be writers or directors now because, you know, we won't do that. But
I know. Well, you know, they do some amazing stuff, especially over at ILM. You know, interesting story. I'm sure you know, like, Masioka, who plays Hiro on that television show, Heroes. He was working for ILM for a long time to, like, supplement his income while he was pursuing his passion as an actor. And, you know, I know Masi through a mutual friend and got to, you know, sit down and talk with him even before Heroes came out. And, you know, he was telling me how, like, you know, they're coming out with, like, some amazing things over at ILM. In fact, they did a lot of the special effects stuff for the Hulk, and which I was, like, you know, able to work on. I have, like, one line, literally, like, one line in that film.
I saw that. I was like, wow, you're in the Hulk?
Yeah, literally, like, my line is, I think, if I remember correctly, strange, reading a phenomenal drop in temperatures there, but simultaneous radiological activity. And that was it. But, like, it was a pure joy to work with.
It was a
big line. Yeah, exactly, a mouthful. So, yeah, I worked with, you know, It was great to work with Ang Lee, whom I love as a director. And
you know what's funny is the only movie I've ever really liked of his so far, like, I didn't really get Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. That was not my movie.
Uh-huh.
But I like The Ice Storm.
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen that. I hear great things about that film. But, you know, one of my favorite films is Sense and Sensibility. It's just, like, you know, Taiwanese, you know, director, you know, directing a English period piece, you know. And I think that's awesome. So, I don't know if he won for Best Director. I think he might have. I'm not sure. I know Emma Thompson won Best Screenplay Adaptation, and she's definitely one of my favorite actresses. Because she's just so brilliant and witty, and I love her to death.
I mean, like, you don't really hear too much about her recently, though. She hasn't really done...
Yeah, I know she's, you know, continuing her, you know, character in the Harry Potter series of films, and she recently, I think, one of her most recent things was, like, Nanny McPhee. Wonderful actress. Definitely, like, you know, one of those entertainers or actors that I definitely look up to because, you know, she's been working a long time. And you know, you see her in interviews, and she's just, you know, witty and fun to watch. You know, we all watched Junior, loved her in Junior, and then, you know, Sense and Sensibility. She even did, like, I think she did, like, a guest spot or a couple guest spots on the Ellen DeGeneres show that I really loved.
Wait a minute, yeah. Junior, that was the Arnold Schwarzenegger,
Danny DeVito,
pregnant.
Yeah, exactly.
In the video movie.
That's her egg that's implanted in Schwarzenegger's, you know, belly. So, yeah. I know. I have, like, a quick list
man.
Of films that I enjoy watching.
Multiplicity? Come on. You must love Multiplicity if you love Junior.
It's been a long
like
time
never
since
really happened.
It's a long time since I've seen Multiplicity, I think. I was thoroughly entertained by it. I'm a big, yeah, what's his
Michael
name?
Keaton.
Yeah, Michael Keaton fan, although he hasn't done too much lately, but, you know, I think he's a really good
actor. That's the sad thing is he's such a... Well, I guess, really, he doesn't really need to do anything. Like, I'm pretty sure he can just sit and just collect from all his movies, you know? Like, he doesn't really need to do a damn thing. He
yeah,
just
perfect
does it because he acts.
Perfect example of that is, like, I'm at Gary's house, and I'm reading his copy of Playboy. And there's like this article on Chris Tucker, who's only done like 3 films in the past 6 years, and they've all been Rush Hours. But
and all he has to do is just sit back and collect his money on Rush Hour, right?
I know, exactly. Like, I think he's getting paid like 20 or 30 million per Rush Hour, so, you know, but I hear he's probably, you know, he's doing another Friday movie with Ice Cube, so that, you know, I'll watch
whoa,
that.
Whoa, he's coming back? His character's
yeah.
coming back? Oh
yeah, but they, but it's like, you know, that franchise is definitely going to put a lot of money into the next
Friday
movie. Right,
you know, but it's ridiculous that he would be back in that. That was,
yeah, it sounds like
he's
character
in that.
You know?
Hmm?
It sounds like he really wants to do it, so, you know.
I think the funny thing is, like, because, you know, like, in the first Friday, he had a pretty good role in it. Like, he had some really, he had all the funny lines. Ice Cube had
yeah.
nothing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I think that's why they heard that Chris Tucker was like, whoa, this guy is the one who's, like, up showing you. You're Ice Cube. You know?
And, you know, that's, yeah, you know, I don't know, like, the whole politics that goes behind, like, what happens in films, but. You know, I enjoyed watching those films, and another, you know, UCLA buddy, his name is Maz Jobani. He's done a lot of stand-up and done a lot of TV shows. I did one of the sequels, so that was a joy to watch. So it's always joy, you know, it's always a pleasure to watch friends, you know, doing well and succeeding and, you know, doing what they love. So, you know, I'll watch them, and, you know, I'll watch the next Friday movie when it comes out, you know. I watched, you know, the latest Rocky film. I loved it.
Oh, by the way, Michael Keaton just directed a movie.
Oh, which one?
It's called The Merry Gentleman.
Okay.
I have no idea what that is about.
Yeah, me neither.
The plot synopsis is empty. At a synopsis.
Is this on IMDb?
Yeah, exactly. But,
yeah.
You know, I think that it's got to be true, right?
Yeah, I mean,
or somewhat true. He's actually directing something. So.
Yeah.
Steve
and
Gunberg
think,
directed a movie. I mean, you know.
God, there's a guy that I haven't seen in a long time, man. I really liked watching him back in the day.
Back in
the
Police
Academy
movies.
All the Police Academy movies. Yeah.
And Short
and,
Circuit
movie. You know, Three Men and a Baby, or Three Men and a Little Lady. You know,
or Diner.
Cool. Yeah. So.
All his old work. But who wants to watch, like, Two of a Kind or whatever that movie was that had the Olsen twins in it?
Oh, God, who was that? Yeah, I didn't see that
one. You didn't see that
New
movie?
New York Minute
he
or something?
He was in that.
New York
no, 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 no. He was in, like, a really bad movie. It was him and, I think, Kirstie Alley,
okay.
I want to say.
I'm not sure.
A bunch of nobodies, like, 2 nobody parents. That's,
I'm not sure.
Got to, let's see, it wasn't a Home Team, that was another one. It Takes Two.
Okay.
That's what it was called.
That's
and it had the Olsen twins in it, and Kirstie Alley, I was right.
Yeah, Kirstie
Alley. God, that's so sad I can, like, remember all these crappy movies.
Hey, you know what, though? You're a big fan of films, and, you know, you gotta watch them, man.
I don't watch them. I didn't watch any of these. I just know of them.
Oh, you know you own a copy. Don't lie.
No, I will not watch It Takes Two. I didn't even remember the title. I thought it was something else. It was another Olsen Twins movie, I thought it was.
Yeah, if I didn't know you better, you'd probably have a copy underneath your pillow, and you're like, I love this movie.
But I'm gonna say it's another movie, even though I don't, and even though I'm pretending I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, it was good talking with you. I got to take off. I'm going to crash because I haven't been sleeping well, but hey, man, it was a pleasure talking with you.
Dude, it was awesome talking to you, too. I'm so glad that you came on the show and that you're happy to do it.
Oh, my pleasure. I can't wait to, like, you know, in the future, hopefully we'll do another interview and, you know.
Well, we'll have other people or whatever. I mean, I just wanted to have this kind of jump the boat about other, you know, doing other shows and stuff, you
yeah.
know.
Hey, man, you got to come out to L.A., too, man.
Oh, man, you guys. I get invited to Taco Tuesday with the Asylum Crew. They do this thing where they go to this one taco place that, like, serves, like, on Tuesday they have, like, really cheap tacos and really cheap beer.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, if you're going to come out to L.A., then, you definitely should come out for the cheap tacos and the cheap beer.
Exactly, cheap tacos, cheap beer. I mean, how
could be
better can you get?
Exactly. All right, brother man. Hey, I'll talk to you soon, and I'll make sure to like you know get you in contact with Jennifer Lyons and Jimmy if I can. So, you know.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you're still, I mean, are you still in contact with those guys? I guess.
Last time I talked to Jennifer was about a few months ago. She's doing pretty well. Jimmy, I haven't talked to really since you know the end of part three. Last I heard about Jimmy, like soon after we were finished, he had to go back to Romania and film another movie.
Right, that was the movie that Gary Jones was doing.
Is that what it was?
I guess that must have been it because he had done that a while ago. So yeah, that must have been it.
Which is funny.
That's
because
really cool.
Like, Jimmy was getting crazy playing poker out in Romania. So, you know, I'm sure, like, the last thing he wanted to do was go back to Romania, but that's funny that he had to go back, so.
There you go, and he had to go back and film another movie by a guy that I had an interview with, so.
Exactly, you know. Small world, dude. And,
yeah, it's all connections.
Absolutely. All right, man, I'll talk to you soon. You know, good luck to you, and, you know.
Yeah,
I'll
dude, and, yeah, if I'm ever in L.A. and I'm working on a project, dude, you're cast.
I look forward to it because I really enjoy watching your shorts on your profiles. It's good stuff.
Yeah, dude. I mean, I'll have to, you know, abide by your SAG rules, but I'll figure it out.
All right, cool, man.
All right, man, you have a good one, dude.
You too, bro.
All right, thank you. Yeah, bye. All right, that was Paul Kim, everybody. Paul was in Dorm Days, and he was in a lot of other movies. He's, I don't want to go into One Hour Photo and Jack Frost 2 and many others. He's a really good guy. Look him up. I'm sure you're going to see more from him. And I hope you enjoyed this interview. Thank you. Bye.